fabulous day. And please stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up next after the CBS News. And thanks for Spencer coming in.
Oh, thanks, Deb.
It's been great to have you.
It's been great being here.
Kicking it with Yoda, thinking up new jams. You may wonder how I got to your land. I traded in my caddy for Millennium Van. I'm a Wookiee, I'm a Wookiee, I'm a Wookiee, I'm a Wookiee.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Some are calling it the Paulson Plan, worked out between the Treasury Secretary, Henry Paulson, and mortgage lenders to help slow the flood of foreclosures and find a way out of the mortgage meltdown.
We have worked through an evolving process to help minimize the impact of the housing downturn on homeowners, neighborhoods, and the U.S. economy.
I'm Jim Taylor. This is Help.
It's a help, but it's simply too little given the magnitude of the problem.
The problem? Hundreds of thousands of people facing foreclosure, most of whom will not be helped by this plan, says John Taylor, president of the National Community Reinvestment Coalition.
Frankly, the free market is failed. I mean, this is a market failure. This is when the government is supposed to step in.
He says a fraction of those in need will actually get their mortgage rates frozen.
The plan is aimed at the coming year, mostly, when an estimated 1.8 million homeowners will wind up on the subprime foreclosure bubble. The three-pronged plan is aimed at helping roughly 1.2 million of them, if they can qualify. How tough can you be when asking a suspect about his plans to blow up a school or make a bomb? More to the point, how tough are you not allowed to be? The CIA reportedly says it destroyed at least two videotapes of their questioning of two Al-Qaeda operatives.
The CIA is not confirming whether those interrogations included rough techniques that some critics call torture. Some of those critics now suspect obstruction of justice. And at least one Democrat in Congress tells the New York Times that the CIA, when he asked, repeatedly denied it videotaped interrogations.
CBS's Dan Revive. The CIA said today the tapes were destroyed to protect the safety of undercover officers and because they have no more intel value. The Iowa caucuses are just around the corner. Pundits are wondering, did Mitt Romney's speech about his Mormon faith assuage enough fears or misunderstandings to help him make up lost ground? Connie Mackey at the Family Research Council in Washington.
His delivery was passionate and his message was inspirational, so I think he probably did himself some good, but the caucuses in Iowa will be more interesting to watch and see if he gained back some of his numbers he's losing to Governor Huckabee.
Police in Omaha say they know who did the shooting in the mall. They know who 19-year-old Robert Hawkins shot and what he used, but there are still a lot of loose ends to wrap up. CBS's Dean Reynolds is there.
They are saying this was a totally random act as far as they can tell, but this investigation is in the early stages. There is, by the police description, a massive area to investigate because the shooting went on for several minutes in many different directions.
McKenzie, Tennessee has canceled school tomorrow for football. It's so the students can be in Murfreesboro, about 40 miles away, for the Class 1A championships against South Pittsburgh, the Blue Cross Bowl, they call it. Wall Street, the Dow leaped about 175 points today. NASDAQ made a nearly 43-point jump. Oil prices up $2.74 to $90.23. This is CBS News.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. You know, most people look at vacuum cleaners simply as a way to clean their homes. I look at them to do so much more, namely to attack bacteria, mold, mildew, and odors, even when they're turned off. Try my new Oreck XL Ultra with IntelliShield technology. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200, and get protection beyond clean.
Hi, my name's Bill, and I'm totally hooked on mobile banking. You see, with Wachovia and AT&T's newest feature, mobile banking is easy. Too easy. I mean, I'll be putting my phone on vibrate before a movie, and before I know it, I'm transferring funds, checking account balances, or even paying the bills. Seriously, who pays a bill during the previews?
Wachovia has taken mobile banking to a new level. To learn more, go to wachovia.com/mobile banking. Are you with Wachovia?
Wachovia Bank N.A. and Wachovia Bank of Delaware N.A. are members FDIC.
digging out and drying up after the Northwest floods.
Cindy Perry spent the last 2 days moving large rocks by herself to repair her driveway.
There was a 3-foot-high wall of rock right there and a 3-foot-high wall of rock right there. And thanks to the neighbor with the backhoe, he leveled it off like this so that I could get out.
She was one of 1,000 or so folks in this county who could not get out of their homes because of the damage to the roads.
There isn't anything you can do about it except do the best you can and get on with life.
Chris Sullivan for CBS News, North Mason County, Washington.
The poignant comment of this event is from the Fort Walton Beach Director of Animal Services. Dee Thompson said the two decapitated pygmy goats found there were definitely beheaded by a human, which begged the question, how else are pygmy goats ever beheaded? Is there some other arcane method by which that happens? They had another one in August. Police say they are searching for the goat beheaders. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Did you know that most vacuums sold today spew dust and bacteria back into the air your family breathes? It's disgusting, I know. Hi, I'm David Orrick, and I want to assure you that my 8-pound Orrick XL does not blow dirt back into the air. For a healthier environment, you want a hypoallergenic Orrick XL. Call me at 1-800-989-4200 for a free 30-day trial. 1-800-989-4200. I promise, my Orrick XL won't blow dirt back into the air. Ever.
We're shopping mall, there's shopping mall.
Things that are small, bobs, big and tall. Drop, fix a mess, there's no distress. Find underway with no delay.
Holiday jams. They're great for toast, bad for last-minute shopping sprees. Steer clear with a Garmin Nuvi with traffic alerts.
Traffic ahead.
Give a Garmin. Give a Garmin.
Preserve your sanity with a Garmin Nuvi. Find it at your favorite retailer.
From the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today. I hope you're doing well, and I hope your computers are virus-free and your email is working. Because over here, we've got sick computers and the email is down. I called tech support in India and they made things worse. So we will revert to the old school low-tech approach and just do a radio talk show today. How about that, huh? Oh, there's so much to talk about. Great people to talk with. Faz Shakir will join us in a moment. Walking Encyclopedia. Going to talk about a couple of different issues. Later this hour, Jonathan Haffetz, an attorney at the Brennan Center at New York University, will join us to comment on yesterday's Supreme Court arguments about Gitmo. Fascinating stuff. And we'll help you understand the difference between the DTA and the MCA, in case you were confused. Next hour, our regular weekly visit with Scott Dick. He's our expert on military and veterans issues. And he'll be joined by Mel Goodman, former CIA analyst, who will comment on this week's national intelligence estimate and just what the president knew and what he didn't know about it and when. Also on today's program, we'll get a live report from Bali, Indonesia, from Martin Wagner, an Earth Justice attorney who is attending the Bali Climate Conference setting there. And so it's lots to talk about, lots of great people. At any moment, you can join the conversation because the phones still work. They are subject to interception by the National Security Agency, but hey, take your chances and call me toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372. And actually, the Peter B. Collins email appears to be working, so you can try to send me a message, peter@peterbcollins.com. And a tip of my hat to Brian Urban, our assistant producer, who's taking your calls today, because he's been trying to fix our computers here, and I think he's getting somewhere. But it's been a bit of a frustrating week, and we need some more digital Band-Aids over here to try to keep it all working. Faz Shakir is the research director at the Center for American Progress. He's also the co-editor of the Daily Progress Report. You can get it free in your email if it's working. Just log on to progressreport.org. Faz, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Peter. How are you?
You're heavily dependent on computers. Are you having a decent week?
Yeah, I am. I'm doing okay. Sorry to hear about your problem.
Your machines are working. Well, first up, I wanted to get your take on President Bush's comments today, his approach to trying to help people who are affected by the subprime mortgage lending crisis. And from what I understand, the president has offered kind of a Band-Aid approach, something that kind of looks good and sounds good and might make a good press release, but actually doesn't help that many Americans who are feeling the crunch.
Yeah, I think that's right. Actually, I'm having a hard time hearing you because there's some music playing in the background here.
Okay, well, let me kill that. There we go. All right, we got it under control now, Fez. Do we?
No.
The music? Okay, how about now? I close the Windows Media Player.
Oh, nope, still there.
It is. What's the song?
It's Latina Mamba or something.
Oh, boy. Well, try to plow through it because I think that's
okay, sure.
Some kind of radio interference.
I think that, about the Bush plan on mortgages, it seems that he has a plan that appears to look good on paper. It's something that is trying to rectify a major crunch for a lot of people who are in the process or are on the verge of being foreclosing on their homes. And so what he's proposed here is to freeze the mortgage rate increases. But in doing so, he leaves out a lot of people who need help. If you look at the fine print here, those people who don't have an income or own homes that are worth less than their mortgage are not included in here. And so there's a lot of people who are going to be left out of this mess, and it's just going to catapult this into the next stage, I think, when somebody else will have to come in and fix it.
I got a press release in one of my email accounts that is working today from a California Assembly member, Ted Lieu, who is chair of the Assembly Banking and Finance Committee. He said that the Center for Responsible Lending estimates that the Bush plan will help only about 7% of borrowers, about 145,000 people in the country. But according to RealtyTrack, there were more than 224,000 foreclosures in October of 2007 alone. And so this is described by this man as putting a finger in a dam that is collapsing.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I know that out in California, there in Orange County, they're really feeling it. It's hitting that area very hard, and so I'm sure that it's a pressing issue for a lot of people out there. And unfortunately, the way they've sold this program is a lot of people, including people like myself. I actually have a mortgage rate increase pending here in the near term future, and it sounds good to those of us who need it. But the problem is that once you look at the fine print, there's a lot of people who don't qualify. And really, the only people who do qualify are those who are really, really in dire straits. But it doesn't, it forces people to go into really, really dire straits before you get assistance. And that's not the optimal way to solve this problem, because we're just going to force people to cycle into a downward path.
Mm-hmm. And you know, this is a very complex set of issues, many of which I don't completely understand. But on the one side, I see the lenders who made deals with people, and even if they, you know, used unethical tactics to get people to take out the mortgages, so-and-so did sign on the bottom line, so there's a contract there. And also, on many of these adjustable-rate mortgages, the lender took a loss in the early stages, hoping to make it up by jacking up the rates over time. And so if the government intervenes and just says five-year freeze, well, the lenders lose money, and doesn't it then make it more difficult for people to borrow money going forward, because they're going to have more capital tied up in rescuing these old loans, and so it'll be harder for new loans to be written?
Yeah, no, this was a deal with the bankers and the mortgage loan distributors, and so there is obviously an interest that they have in this deal, and it's transparent. If you look at the market today, Standard & Poor's warned that the Bush plan, what they did was Standard & Poor's warned that there were going to be lower ratings coming out from mortgage bonds. So that's an indication that the Bush plan itself it's not all it's held up to be, that the market is already reacting in a way that says actually there's going to be bad news coming down the pipe. And it's interesting that the Bush administration now has resorted to doing the one thing that they said they would never do, which is engage in the market and try to regulate it. You know, just a week ago, Dick Cheney was out there saying, we believe in the market, we believe it'll work. And so this is an administration that comes from that philosophy of saying we're going to be hands-off. And the fact that they would engage at this point, I think they do so warily, and they don't do so with the right intent. And because you have people who don't believe in government trying to now regulate it, you can predict that a bad outcome is going to result.
Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of the equation, I have concerns about what's been described so far in the plan, because they're going to arbitrarily pick a credit score and say, well, you know, if your credit score was below that, you get treated one way where we'll let you freeze it. But if your credit score was just a little bit higher, then you might not qualify for this freeze/bailout program. And that can be incredibly arbitrary depending on exactly how it's implemented.
Yeah, there's a credit score threshold. There's also an income threshold. So, I mean, there's a lot of different those numbers that they pick for those thresholds are going to be very vital, and unfortunately, it still doesn't address the very basic issue about people who are trapped into mortgage loans that are going to be skyrocketing, and that their incomes haven't adjusted to meet that skyrocketing increase, and they're going to be having to foreclose or declare bankruptcy. There's nothing in this plan that really helps those people.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Faz Shakir here on the Peter B. Collins Show. He's at the Center for American Progress, and he alone can hear the special Latin music that is helping him dance through this report. Faz, the other breaking story today was Mitt Romney gave his much ballyhooed speech about religion. And I'm wondering if you think this is going to solve the problem he's having with restive evangelicals. And some of this is driven by some of the very slick comments that Mike Huckabee has made in portraying himself as a Christian leader and saying, gosh, I just don't know what Mitt Romney's faith is and whether he believes in the Bible and Jesus and all that.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how Mike Huckabee has treated this, because he obviously has a political advantage to be gained here, and he's trying to use it to gain political advantage. He says that there's a lot of people who have become disaffected from Romney in the Republican base because they're wary of a Mormon, and so they're gravitating towards Romney, and he's gaining in the polls. And so he is now seizing on that for political advantage and won't declare, as I think hopefully all of us would, that whatever your religion is, that shouldn't be the reason for or against your merits in office, but rather what you say and how you act. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's interesting that Mike Huckabee wants to make religion a major part of this campaign, and he brings it on himself. Of course, he's a former minister, and so he's constantly talking about the fact that he's informed by God as to the policies that he is pushing for, and that to me is far more dangerous than Mitt Romney, who has never said that God or religion influences his public policy actions, which is the step mm-hmm. that Romney does or Huckabee does take.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break, Faz. We're going to hang up and call you back on a different line and see if we can lose the music, okay?
Okay.
All right, that's Faz Shakir at the Center for American Progress. If you have a question or comment, you can call us now. Maybe you'll hear some Latin music. 888-5... You know, when the glitches hit, they all come at once. 888-5-PETER-B. That's toll-free at 888-573-8372. I'm your humbled host, Peter B. Collins.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Let me welcome you to Planet Cruise.
It's the all-new Planet Cruise Comedy Hour at the Quumba Jazz Center this Friday, December 7th. I'm your humble host, Richard Stockton.
And I don't just sleep in my car. I wake up in the neighborhood of my choice.
And our comedian, Andrew Norelli.
Don't turn the lights on. I was going to take her home.
The Planetoids, the Great Morgani, and Ukulele Dick.
My Ukulele
Peter
Dick.
Peter B. Collins. The outpatient player.
They let the players out.
All comedically capturing the spirit of Santa Cruz. That's Friday, December 7th at the Columba. Be sure and buy your tickets early. That's at Gateway's Books, Streetlight Records.
Ooh, save $5.
you're going to laugh your glutes off.
Hi, this is Peter B. Collins. I'll be showing up Friday night in Santa Cruz for the Planet Cruise Comedy Hour, so why don't you? I want to see a contingent from Monterey and Pacific Grove. And I'm not sure what Richard Stockton has in mind, but you just heard him use the humble host moniker. Lawsuits will be filed.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Pam and Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos on the Christmas season.
We have the tree, we have refreshments. It's turned out to be a really big season for us.
Someone was in the other day who was telling their companion who had been there for the first time that, oh, and they also do Christmas, and you should see it with all the lights. It's just beautiful. So.
It's one of the prettiest times of the year.
Yeah. Christmas is fun. I mean, we start to kick off with for the season the first weekend in November with an open house, and we have homemade refreshments. In December, we have a live green wreath workshop where people can come and make their own green wreaths.
Call us at 685-1626, and we keep lists of anyone who's interested in the classes. Schedule them accordingly. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1, heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn. If you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find. The Potting Shed.
Gifts for gardeners and everyone. We're hard to find, but it's worth it.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Karma Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Karma Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host, Peter B. We're talking with Faz Shakir from the Center for American Progress, co-editor of the Daily Progress Report. And Faz, we made a few adjustments there during the break. Has the Latin music gone away?
Yes, it's wonderful. I can hear your voice crystal clear.
Well, we're not too far from the transmitter side of a Spanish music station. Sometimes when I turn the aluminum foil the wrong way, it comes bleeding.
Interesting. You know, it adds another dimension to your radio show. You might want to think about incorporating it. It makes it very romantic.
Well, this is the lefty talk show you can dance to. We're very proud of that. Aaron joins us from Elk Grove with something about the subprime mortgage mess. Hello, Aaron.
Hi, how are you?
Doing okay.
I have to tell you, I woke up this morning to hear, you know, about Bush's big plan, and I was so excited. And from what I just heard on your show just now, my bubble is bursted, and I'm just saddened to hear the actual facts about this plan, because wouldn't you say that the majority of people in this situation are people who purchased their houses at the top of the the bubble when the market was doing really well, and
right.
It's because the market slumped that we can't refinance out of our adjustable rate mortgages.
Well, you're underwater, and the actual winter flooding hasn't even started.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I do want people to know, I want your listeners to know, is that there is help out there, and it's not, you don't have to turn to George Bush to get it. I went directly to my mortgage company in July. I wrote them a letter, and I said, please help me. You know, I was told by my mortgage broker, going back to what you guys were saying about responsible lending and all that kind of stuff, my
mm-hmm.
mortgage broker said, oh, you're on this index where, you know, it rarely will fluctuate above a half a percent or a percent and this and that. And, you know, didn't know anything about the mortgage industry, so I'm like, okay, yeah, let's do it, you know, whatever. And so, you know, I'm thinking, well, the market will be just fine, and I can refi out of this adjustable rate when it comes due. And then when that, you know, if that falls through, well, at least it's only going to be about a percent. I can deal with that fluctuation,
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Right.
And it turns out that that's not the case, you know. So I went directly to my mortgage company, wrote them a letter, and told them exactly how things have been. And I said, look, I'd love to keep paying you guys interest. I just can't afford 11.5%.
So did you get to refinance?
They modified my mortgage back to the 6.5% for the next 2 years, and they said that they would be willing to revisit it again in 2 years if the market has not improved.
Wow. Well, you set a great example, and that offers a little hope here, Erin.
Yeah, I hope that people will just go to their mortgage companies. I'm telling everybody I know who's in my situation, and I'm so glad that I was able to get on your show and hopefully reach some more people.
Well, that's good news. Faz, do you want to add anything?
Well, that is great news. I wonder, were there large refinancing costs involved? Because a lot of the things that I hear from people are that they can't refinance their loans because there's a tremendous cost involved, and so mm-hmm. even when they try to contact their mortgage backers, they can't get the type of deal that would still satiate their need.
Good point. Yeah. Now, Erin, since you have a happy story, tell us the name of the lender.
You know, to be honest, the loan is now serviced by Wilshire Financial, but I cannot remember the name of the actual bank who owns my loan.
Okay.
But
that's common.
There are mortgage modifications out there.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to refinance you, obviously, if you're upside down, which the most of us are.
Yeah.
But they will modify them because they don't want to go through the foreclosure process either.
Well, Erin, I'm glad you're able to hold on to your house. Am I invited to your holiday party?
Thank you, absolutely.
Okay. Very good. Nice to hear from you today. Now, Faz, one of the other big stories that headlines the progress report today is the climate change conference in Bali. I've been to that island in Indonesia. It's a beautiful place.
Oh, really?
And
you've been everywhere, haven't you?
Well, no. I've got some gaps in my passport history, but that's one place I've been, and I'd love to go back. But I'd be distracted from actually, you know, attending a conference. Give us your sense of the U.S. position there. And are we going to be able to prevail as the world coalesces around very firm goals and commitments, and we keep saying, yeah, well, we have a voluntary program in place?
Well, that's it. We have two different positions, and that's not obviously the best way to go into this summit, but there's two different positions. One comes from the Bush administration. The Bush administration line is pretty clear. It's been out there for a while, and that's, as you said, voluntary reductions, a lot of talk about technology being the answer, but then teaming up with China and India to find ways to not get involved in this mandated mess, right? They don't want to have other people dictating the necessary reductions in carbon emissions that are needed. So that's one approach. The other approach, actually, also from Americans at the summit, comes from a group of senators and others, including John Kerry, Barbara Boxer is there, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Governor from California is there, also Al Gore is there, and they're kind of leading a shadow delegation that includes some business leaders, and they're trying to urge the international community to go ahead and push forward for the mandates and carbon reductions, and they are saying that the U.S. would be a part of that. And so it's good that we at least are represented, and Bush is increasingly isolated in his position. But, of course, it's not sending the single unified message that we need to be sending.
Well, you know what we should do is take up a collection here. I have some promotional copies of a calendar that somebody put together. It's called the Bad President Calendar, and it counts down the days until Bush departs in January of 2009. And maybe we should pass one of those out to each person attending the climate change conference with a wink and a nod and saying, hey, things are going to be different. Just hang in there and be patient with the U.S.
Yeah, I everyone's in that camp, right? We're hoping for November of 2008, and we're getting closer.
Regime change. Thank you, Faz.
Thanks, Peter.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. That's Faz Shakir from the Center for American Progress. Attorney Jonathan Haffetz joins us to talk about the Gitmo case before the Supreme Court next.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by Han Office Furniture. Durable, flexible, and looks great for years. Han, smart now, smarter later. I'm Charles Osgood. White-knuckle passengers hold on tight at takeoff and breathe easier when the wheels touch down. But a new report from the Government Accountability Office says there's growing danger on the runway before you take off and after you land. The story after this for Han. You expect outstanding performance from your office staff. Shouldn't you expect the same from your office furniture? The Han Company is the market leader in providing small and medium-sized businesses with flexible office furnishings that deliver durability, comfort, and improved workplace performance. Every Han product is backed by a limited lifetime warranty and built to withstand the rigors of everyday use. Year after year. Han. Smart now, smarter later. For a free catalog or quote, visit gethan.com. That's gethon.com.
The 60s defied convention, from fashion to music to cereal. Take Total, the very first cereal with 100% of 11 vitamins and minerals. Today, only Total cereal has 100% daily value of calcium to support a healthy body and an antioxidant to support a healthy mind. Plus, with new flavors like Cranberry Crunch, it tastes amazing. It won't change the world, just how the world eats breakfast. Total, for mind and body.
When all is said and done, more will be said than done. That certainly is true of the nation's airport runways.
Over many years, we have seen well-defined, carefully thought-out plans issued, and then a change of administration. They're shelved, inadequately funded, not invented here, not implemented by new personnel, and nothing happens.
Jim Oberstar, chairman of the House Transportation Committee, talking about this new GAO report on runway safety, or lack thereof, and the rising number of near collisions. CBS News correspondent Nancy Cordes.
What the GAO is concerned about is that these numbers are on the rise as airports are busier than ever, and they say that the FAA needs to take advantage of cheap technology that's out there that can be implemented, certain types of runway lights that will keep planes off of an active runway.
Same old, says Congressman Oberstar.
What's new is what is old. The failure to address issues of 20 years ago, 16 years ago, appears again in 2007. Cost increases and delays have plagued the development of runway safety technology.
It's all in the report, says Nancy Cordes.
The GAO says that the FAA promised to take a leadership responsibility on this crucial aviation issue in 2002 and then basically dropped the ball, that it let its Office of Runway Safety go without a permanent director for 2 years, that the staffing in the Office of Runway Safety was cut in half, and that, the GAO says, led to an absence of national leadership on this very critical aviation issue.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's A Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
I'm Sheila Gale. Join me every Saturday afternoon from 4 to 5 as we talk about effective ways to help us get through life's greatest challenges. Depression, death of a loved one, addictions, illness, fear. There's nothing we won't talk about. My guests include life coaches, best-selling authors, and you. Call in and together we'll find ways to live with less stress and more joy and peace. Brought to you by Sun Street Centers. Serving Monterey County since 1968. Sun Street Centers.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. And I had a dream last night that a bunch of guys swam away from Guantanamo Bay. It was just a dream.
Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak somewhere in this town. See, me and the boys, we don't like it, so we're getting up and going down. Hot and low, looking right to left. If you see us coming, I think it's best we move away. Do you hear what I say? From under my breath.
It's on the far end of the island. Of course, is not U.S. territory. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. There was a historic set of arguments presented to the United States Supreme Court yesterday regarding the fate of detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The arguments centered around issues related to the DTA and the MCA. The DTA is the Detainee Treatment Act. The MCA is the Military Commissions Act, the one that I renamed the Joe Stalin Detention, Interrogation, and Kangaroo Court Act of 2006. Jonathan Hafitz is counsel at the Brennan Center at New York University. He has been focusing on a range of post-September 11th detention issues. And before that, he was working at the ACLU and an attorney at a public interest and constitutional law firm. Jonathan Hafitz, welcome back to our program today.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, I was encouraged in some respects. My best window on the arguments yesterday was last night's coverage on the PBS NewsHour, where they included some interesting audio tracks from the arguments that were presented. And first, a quick baseline. The case is Boumediene versus the United States, and it includes, it's an amalgam of many cases, but it represents a total of 37 detainees at Guantanamo Bay. And one of the critical points here is that each and every one of those individuals asserts that they are completely innocent of the terrorism or enemy combatant charges that have presumably placed them at Guantanamo Bay. And we have to say presumably because many of these people have never been charged and don't really have a clear idea of why they have been detained without being charged or tried, many of them now for as long as 5 or more years.
Well, I think that's an excellent point and really sums up what the case is about. These people have been held, as you say, for 6 years without a fair hearing. And what they're seeking is something that's so basic to our Constitution. It's the right to habeas corpus, which is the name for an ancient writ that derives from the Latin. Its roots date back to the Magna Carta of 1215. It's been with us in the United States since our founding. And what it means is the individual who's locked up by the government, who's in prison, has a right to go to court and to be able to demand that the government produce its evidence and a basis to hold him. If the government has evidence, if there's a justification for imprisoning that person, then the person may be held. It's not a get-out-of-jail-free card or anything like that. It just establishes the right to a fair process before a judge, that must happen when the United States takes away an individual's liberty.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think is a good point of clarification for those of us who are not trained in the law, Jonathan, is that this case, as I understand it, is trying to establish that these people have constitutional rights. And as constitutional rights, they cannot be changed or taken away by statutes that are passed by Congress, like the Military Commissions Act, which attempts to remove the right of habeas corpus from these detainees who are held. And, of course, there's a whole argument about whether Gitmo is effectively part of the United States or not.
Yes, that's exactly right. The argument is over whether the Guantanamo detainees have constitutional rights, or at least a constitutional right to habeas corpus.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that that's a right that cannot be taken away by the president or cannot be taken away by Congress unless there's an actual suspension of the writ because the emergency is so dire that the courts cannot perform their functions. But otherwise, they are. This is a basic right that the political branches of government, the executive or the legislature, cannot. Individual of, and the executive's argument is that they cannot detain these individuals. They can deprive these individuals of habeas corpus because they are non-detained at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, outside the United States, and that's what the case is about.
Mm-hmm. And let's just briefly talk about the issue of Gitmo and whether it is sufficiently separate from the United States to separate these detainees from any constitutional rights. Because if these individuals were held, say, at the Navy brig in Charleston, where Jose Padilla was, or just put into Leavenworth Prison in Kansas, would they not then have constitutional rights even though they are not American citizens or residents? Willful residents.
Yes. What the government's argument is that because they're not inside the United States, because they're being held at Guantanamo, which in all practical respects is U.S. territory. Only U.S. law applies there. U.S. is total control. Even the iguanas are protected.
Well, it's an obvious. Law, but is it not an obvious contrivance by the Bush administration?
Exactly that's exactly right. In there are detailed memos. Dating from in early 2002, that they deliberately brought prisoners to Guantanamo, as opposed to, say, the United States, because they believe that they could make an argument that they didn't have a right of access to the court.
Mm-hmm.
And if the government is right, and I submit they're not, and it's against, you know, basic American values, but if the government were right, it would give the president the power to set up law-free zones, to just keep people, to bring them to places, you know, to secret prisons, to set up more Guantanamos in places outside the law, and to deny them basic constitutional rights. It's really a very, very dangerous argument, and to set up these kind of law-free zones.
And it's
an argument that's contrary to the Constitution.
And relative to Gitmo, Jonathan, is it not now a settled issue as a result of Razul and Hamdan, the previous Supreme Court decisions?
I think it is a settled issue with Guantanamo, absolutely. The Supreme Court made very clear, it's been now 3.5 years in a case called Rasul versus Bush, that Guantanamo detainees had a right to habeas corpus because Guantanamo was in all practical respects U.S. territory. There might be questions about some other place, but at least at Guantanamo they had a right to habeas corpus. But the administration sought to prevent hearings from going forward, and then regrettably Congress stepped in and tried to take away this right. And so the detainees are back now at the Supreme Court again for the third time in 6 years. And all they're asking for is a day in court. It's really sad. I mean, it really says a lot about us that we've not provided individuals this kind of process. And hopefully, and I'm confident the Supreme Court will say there is a constitutional right at Guantanamo.
And the accounts I've read indicate that Solicitor General Paul Clement, who was there to defend barbarism, based most of his arguments on this issue, that because it's not part of the sovereign territory of the United States, that the Constitution has no jurisdiction. Isn't that a waste of his time and a failing argument? And I mean, it appeared that Scalia was interested in it. But
Scalia was interested in it, and Justice Roberts, who was not on the court before, seems willing to join him. I think so, and you know, I think it was a waste of time, because I think that there are at least 5 votes on the court to say that there's a constitutional right to habeas corpus, including Justice Kennedy. And, you know, one other thing I'd point out is that the government has this argument about sovereignty. Really, what it means is that the political branches can decide and can create places outside the law. But that wasn't the test at historically. The test was that if the executive locked someone up and they, under their control and territory under their control, they had to answer to a court for it. They had to be accountable. But I do think, you know, this issue, I am confident that the Supreme Court will say, you know, that there is a constitutional right to habeas corpus at Guantanamo.
Mm-hmm. And how do you rate the advocacy of Seth Waxman, who presented the case on behalf of the detainees?
Superlative. He's one of the foremost Supreme Court practitioners of our generation. He's the former Solicitor General of the United States, and I think gave a compelling argument. I think, law and morality are on his side, but he nonetheless gave a compelling argument. And I think, in particular, the last few moments, if for anyone who's heard the argument or was there, where he described a case, a couple of the cases of the detainees, and really underscored why habeas was so important, and how these detainees who were denied lawyers and put through one-sided sham military proceedings could not, were not able to prove their innocence. But once they had a lawyer, the lawyers were able to gain evidence that showed they were innocent, and to come forward with that evidence. And there's got to be some kind of process in place for individuals to vindicate their rights.
And in terms of Waxman's performance, at times it seems like he was a little bit more strident than is actually tolerated in the setting of the Supreme Court. Now, I wasn't there. I just heard some of these excerpts. And I was glad for his strong advocacy. But was he a little bit more aggressive than is the norm in the Supreme Court hearings?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I'm not certain, but I think the tone was the exactly correct one. I mean, this is a momentous case, and we're talking about great legal and constitutional principles that define our nation, but we're also talking about human beings, and we're talking about individuals, now still over 300 who've been locked up without a day in court for 6 years. And, you know, enough is enough. I think one of his most powerful lines was when, you know, he said, look, the time for experimentation is over. You know, it is time to, well, he didn't say that. That's what he said. What I would say is, you know, it's time to put up or shut up. You know, we're long past that time, but certainly now is the time. And if the government has evidence, if they have a basis to hold people, we'll come forward with the evidence before a court, present it. There, I am certain, are some people at Guantanamo who there's a basis to hold, but I'm just as certain that there's some people who are not. And our country is about having a process to determine whether or not we're holding the right guy and whether or not we're comporting with the rule of law.
Jonathan Hafitz is with us from the Brennan Center at the New York University School of Law. If you have a question or comment about the Supreme Court arguments regarding Guantanamo Bay, give us a call at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. So as you look at these arguments, what is the best hope-for outcome that you could outline for us, Jonathan?
I think the best outcome would be for the Supreme Court to say there's a constitutional right to habeas corpus for Guantanamo detainees. That right can't be taken away by Congress or the executive, and that the process that's been put in place instead of habeas corpus, these sham military proceedings known as combatant status review tribunals, which I tell you, you get more due process in New York, where I'm from, when you contest a parking ticket and you're doing these things.
Uh-huh.
And and then there's a very, very limited review that's available in the Court of Appeals, which only can look at whether this tribunal followed its own rules, really a Kafka-esque charade, that this does not equal or satisfy what habeas corpus, this 800-year-old remedy that's been with us since the beginning of our nation, provides, and that the detainees have a right to a habeas corpus, a prompt habeas corpus determination by a judge of whether they're being properly held or not.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break and return in just a moment with Jonathan Hafitz from the Brennan Center at the New York University Law School. Again, my lines are open if you have a comment. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We'll continue here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
George Chavez of Chavez Jewelry Design specializes in recycling and restoring old jewelry, whether it's old broken jewelry or simply an item which no longer suits you. George invites you to actively participate in the creative process and to personally direct the creation of that special piece of jewelry that is truly and uniquely you. You'll find George weekdays 11 to 7 at Chavez Jewelry Design, 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville. Questions? Give George a call at 768-8004. That's 768-8004.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests, and you call in with your questions and ideas, and we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future, and we're doing it five times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
The Peter B. Collins Show, as we continue our discussion about the constitutional rights of so-called unlawful enemy combatants, those detained at Guantanamo Bay, and I should mention, potentially at other sites around the world. We know that there was a kind of unofficial gulag of detainees that has been somewhat combined at Guantanamo Bay, but we, of course, have to believe everything the Bush administration tells us to consider that a fact. So there certainly could be individuals at the Bagram detention center in Afghanistan, or some of the prisons that were in Poland, Romania, and other countries where the U.S. was holding people, at least on a short-term basis, perhaps longer. Jonathan Hafitz is with us from the New York University Brennan Center, and we're joined by Muhammad from Sacramento. Welcome, Muhammad. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to compare the people of Guantanamo and the people of Abu Ghraib.
Okay, compare them in what respect? In terms of their legal rights?
Yeah, I mean, you hear there is torture here. Some people are released from here and some people are released from here.
Mm-hmm.
And you rarely hear about anybody put to trial in Guantanamo or even in Abu Ghraib, even okay. In Iraqi court. You don't hear.
Well, let me make one distinction before we turn to the guy who really knows the answer here, and that is that people held at Abu Ghraib were largely not considered to be terrorists, but they were considered to be domestic offenders inside Iraq. And so their status, I would view as different from those who were sent to Guantanamo. But, Jonathan, is there a distinction without a difference there?
No, I think that's right. I mean, there are some, it is a distinction. They were, although some, I think, you know, there were sort of different rationales, I think, going on in Iraq. There were some who were being held, even in accordance with the Geneva Conventions, but there were others who were being sort of held outside of that and being held in what the administration described as its war on terror. But one of the interesting things about Guantanamo in Iraq is how many of the abuses interrogation techniques, the torture tactics that started at Guantanamo in 2002-2003, then migrated to Iraq. In fact, one of the general,
Jeffrey Miller
was going over, ran Guantanamo,
right,
and then went over to Iraq, brought them with him. He went to Gitmoize, Iraq, and I think that this is what led up to and resulted in Abu Ghraib and the other abuses that we've read out. I mean, that's the thing with when you legalize and allow these kinds of abuses, there's no limit to their spread. You kind of lose any sense of not just proportion, but sense that you're bound by legal obligations.
Yeah, Muhammad, thanks for a great question. Appreciate that. Now, Bob in Monterey, you're next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you, Peter B. I wanted to bring into the forefront the idea that we're operating, instead of as a country of laws, a country of policies within the court system. And the policy is to get you in there and then to do whatever they can do to take your rights away or your money, because you have to fight it once you're in court. You have to, you understand what I mean? You have to spend your time and money.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right, and I mean, part of the problem, they're not even giving access to, they're not even giving people access to the courts.
No, and then once you're in there, they dismiss your case after you've spent a lot of time and effort, and it's a total loss. But they're applying policy as opposed to law, because they dismiss it when they realize that there is no law, and you know that.
Right, and I'm not sure if you're referring to this, but this is one of the other things that the administration has done repeatedly, is to, when they've been confronted, when they've been kind of called on their practices by a court, or they fear a court is going to come down with adverse decision, they just abandon their policy. Like the case of Jose Padilla is an excellent example, when they held him for 3.5 years in military custody, and 2 days before the government had to submit its response to the Supreme Court, and the court was going to decide to take up its, whether or not to take up the case, they charged Padilla. They brought charges against him and did what they should have done all along, which was put him in the civilian system. So, they do anything to the administration to avoid accountability.
Well, it seems to be both the administration and on a local level with local politics as well.
All right, Bob, thank you very much. I appreciate that comment. Jonathan, earlier this week, we talked with John Eisenberg, who is a Bay Area attorney representing some individuals who are challenging the NSA's domestic wiretap and surveillance program. And he described this bizarre Orwellian process where he and his clients were not permitted to see the arguments of the government, but they were permitted to file responses to them. And you just scratch your head and say, wow, what kind of a legal process can there be if the plaintiffs in a case cannot see the information that the government is submitting to the court, yet they are permitted to respond to what they think or imagine the government has submitted?
It's just an Alice in Wonderland-like quality to it, and I don't mean that in a good way. I mean,
no.
Kafkaesque is the word. I mean, it is really mind-boggling.
So now we go to Guantanamo Bay, where Ahmed Khadr, Khadr, a Canadian, is being held for one of these tribunals, and they're saying that names of the witnesses will be given to his lawyers, but the lawyers can't share that with the client. And so how can he defend himself if his own lawyers cannot tell him what they know about the government's case?
He absolutely can't. It's a hallmark of a fair trial, right? I mean, what you think about it, you've got to know what the accusations are. You got to be able to confront your accusers, and if the truth will prevail, that's our system. But the administration is not. They don't care about these values, and I think they don't believe law and due process have any place. They just want to be able to prosecute what they call the war on terrorism without regard to American traditions, values, human rights, and it's really, I think, really bringing this country down. It's we're taking us back to like the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm. And in some of the comments published from the Supreme Court hearings yesterday, it does appear that some of the justices, Souter in particular, seem to recognize that this process doesn't give adequate counsel to the detainees, either at the status hearings or at the tribunals.
Right, and counsel is important. I mean, these hearings are determine whether either you can be convicted of a war crime or whether you can be detained as an enemy combatant potentially for the rest of your life. And, you know, having a lawyer there is fundamental to be able to assist someone gather evidence. I mean, if you think about it, you're locked up in Guantanamo, you're held incommunicado. How do you get the evidence, the documents, the witnesses, the records that
Jonathan,
would show you're innocent?
I'm out of time. Thank you for your counsel today, Jonathan Heffetz.
Thank you, Peter.
Nice to talk to you again. With Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, explain the value of wines made from organic grapes.
You know, I think that drinking organic wines is what Tony Robbins described as a class one experience. Wines made with organic grapes feel good. They taste extremely good, just like an organic tomato or a strawberry tastes usually better than a conventional counterpart. They are good. There's plenty of scientific evidence about the health benefits of drinking wine in moderation. Drinking organic wines also is good for other people in that you know you're supporting farmers. And last but not least, it's definitely good then for the higher good.
The Organic Wine Company. Log on to ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A plan to help thousands at the brink of foreclosure.
There's no perfect solution, but the homeowners deserve our help.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill, where the House has passed an energy bill with some dramatic policy shifts that President Bush doesn't like.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. President Bush today unveiled an agreement between the administration and lenders to extend a helping hand to more than a million homeowners at risk of foreclosure. They'll have several options.
By refinancing an existing loan into a new private mortgage, by moving them into an FHA secure loan, or by freezing their current interest rate for 5 years.
Mr. Bush says there's enough blame to go around.
Some lenders made loans that borrowers did not understand, especially in the subprime sector. Some borrowers took out loans they knew they could not afford.
Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson says this bailout plan is not a silver bullet. Many people, says CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus, are already in too deep.
The plan is going to help a very narrow band of homeowners. These are people who are not currently foreclosed, not behind on their monthly payments, not the people who need the help most right now. What this does is help homeowners who are not going to be able to afford the higher rates when they reset next year. So critics are saying this is simply too little too late from the government to have any kind of substantive impact on the economy.
Now this.
This holiday season, give the most eternal, unique gift of the year. Name a star after someone. I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we'll name a star after anyone on your gift list. The star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office, and we will send an incredible personalized gift package. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com for the gift that shines forever.
Pep Boys has fantastic savings on hundreds of great gifts this holiday season. For starters, you'll never get lost again with the Garmin Nubi GPS unit that features turn-by-turn voice guidance. It's an incredible $199.98. And oh, what fun it is to ride with the incredibly fun Razor 100-watt scooter for only $89.99 after mail-in rebate. Don't miss the hundreds of other great holiday values in this week's circular or at PepBoys.com. The Pep Boys holiday savings event is going on now. Season's greetings from Pep Boys.
On Capitol Hill today,
the motion is adopted.
The House, voting 235 to 181, approved an energy plan that includes the first federal gasoline mileage standards in three decades.
This is a sweeping bill that would raise mileage standards for cars and SUVs, require utilities to start using more wind and solar power, and, says Democrat Tom Udall of New Mexico, mandate far more ethanol for cars.
We stand today on the verge
of a new energy horizon.
But Oklahoma Republican John Sullivan complains it doesn't encourage any new oil drilling.
How Congress could possibly consider addressing an energy bill that has no energy in it.
The bill would take away billions in tax benefits given to oil companies in earlier energy bills, one of several reasons President Bush threatens to veto it. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
As written, the White House says the measure has no chance of being signed into law. In a bid to reassure evangelical Christians, Mitt Romney made a speech today trying to put his Mormon faith in perspective.
If I'm fortunate to become your president, I will serve no one religion, no one group, no one cause, and no one interest.
Despite his heavy spending and hard campaigning in Iowa, Romney faces a late surge by Baptist minister Mike Huckabee. A man with a hunting rifle walked into a mall in Muskegon County, Michigan today. Someone called 911. It turned out he was only taking the gun to a sporting goods store to be serviced, but police say it was a big mistake to use the front entrance just a day after the tragedy in Omaha. Looking at surveillance video from the West Roads Mall, Omaha Police Chief Thomas Warren says 19-year-old Robert Hawkins apparently concealed his gun under a hooded sweatshirt.
The weapon that was used in this incident was an AK-47 assault weapon. We believe that Mr. Hawkins obtained the firearm from his stepfather.
More from CBS News correspondent Dean Reynolds.
He got into the mall twice on the day of the shooting, first possibly to check it out, and the secondly, clearly, to act. He went into the mall, up the elevator to the third floor, and witnesses said that when the doors opened onto the third floor, he began shooting immediately.
Six employees and two customers of the Von Maur department store were killed before Hawkins took his own life. The mall was closed today. Late word from NASA, the launch of Space Shuttle Atlantis, scrubbed today because of a technical problem, is off at least until Saturday. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. You know, most people look at vacuum cleaners simply as a way to clean their homes. I look at them to do so much more, namely to attack bacteria, mold, mildew, and odors, even when they're turned off. Try my new Oreck XL Ultra with IntelliShield technology. Try it risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200, and get protection beyond clean.
Hi, my name's Bill, and I'm totally hooked on mobile banking. You see, with Wachovia and AT&T's newest feature, mobile banking is easy. Too easy. I mean, I'll be putting my phone on vibrate before a movie, and before I know it, I'm transferring funds, checking account balances, or even paying the bills. Seriously, who pays a bill during the previews?
Wachovia has taken mobile banking to a new level. To learn more, go to wachovia.com/mobile banking. Are you with Wachovia?
Wachovia Bank N.A. and Wachovia Bank of Delaware N.A. are members FDIC.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
Put down that weapon.
Political message from Australia's Midnight Oil. It's called Put Down That Weapon. This hour, we're going to start off talking about the remarkable announcement earlier this week of the new National Intelligence Estimate with a 180-degree revision of our estimation of Iran's development of nuclear weapons. And joining me as usual here is Scott Dick. He's our contributor on military and veterans issues. He served in the Marine Corps and then retired as a major from the United States Army. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm trying to stay dry, but for the most part, I'm okay.
Good, good. And just a quick mention that Scott is launching a new radio broadcast that'll follow my program every weeknight on KRXA 540 in Monterey. And that kicks off next week. Congratulations and best wishes to you, Scott.
Thanks, Peter. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to following you.
Well, it's going to be very interesting, and I'm glad to see you taking over some time on the airwaves to talk about the issues that you care about and know a lot about. Got some reinforcements for us today. Mel Goodman returns to our program. He has been on with us many times before. He is a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy, and he served at the Central Intelligence Agency as a senior intelligence analyst from 1966 to about 1990. Mel, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Peter. Good to be with you again.
Well, it's nice to talk with you. And first up, guys, I want to share with you that because of the revised intelligence, CNN has had to make a scheduling change. They were planning to broadcast a two-hour special called We Were Warned, Iran Goes Nuclear, and it was going to be broadcast on December 12th, and they have had to retool it. They've pulled the program. It included some elements that were set partially in the future, some sort of a scenario scheme that was going to be displayed, including former government officials playing fictional cabinet members, and that's going to be replaced by some sort of a special hosted by Campbell Brown, whose husband is Dan Senor, S-E-N-O-R, who, of course, was a spokesman for the Bremer occupation force in Iraq and is very close with the White House, so we can get some real objective reporting there. Now, other than the CNN changes, Mel Goodman, what other kinds of changes do you think are dictated by this stunning new national intelligence estimate?
Well, as you say, it's stunning, and it's good to see CNN being flexible and cerebral, but I don't see that in the White House. Now, here are the basic changes that have to be made. I think the White House, and particularly Dick Cheney and Stephen Hadley, the National Security Advisor, will have to take U.S. military attacks off the table. I don't think this is a reasonable option. I never thought it was in the first place, but certainly it's no option now. Two, I think the United States has to rethink its sanctions policy, and that's on two levels. One, unilateral sanctions, which we've passed through the Congress, which I think were going to be very difficult to get through the Congress again, but more importantly, because of the international dimension and the lack of any real international credibility for the Bush administration because of the lies over Iraq, is the whole issue of international sanctions and UN sanctions. We got resolutions through in 2006 and 2007. I don't think we can do that again. Three, I think we have to be concerned that we have an intelligence community, as you say, shifted 180 degrees, but both in 2005 and 2007, they reached their judgments with high confidence. I can understand the confidence this time around because I've talked to enough people in the intelligence community to know that the evidence is very strong, but it'll be very hard for the intelligence community to defend their high confidence in 2005 when they said that Iran was on its way with a nuclear weapons program. And more importantly, they said no amount of international pressure would work. In other words, deterrence would be a failure. Now, of course, they have high confidence about deterrence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think three, or I guess this would be four.
Well, who's counting?
Who's counting when you've got issues of war and peace at stake?
Yeah.
You have certain concerns on the part of the neocons and their Israeli supporters who will stay concerned over Iran's nuclear capabilities. Norman Podhoretz is already saying that this is just a deception on the part of Iran and that CIA is out to undercut President Bush. And then finally, the change that we need to see, that we see no sign of whatsoever, is the need for strategic diplomacy. Let's face it, the non-recognition policy of Iran that goes back now nearly 30 years has been a failure. And to hold the conference in Annapolis a couple of weeks ago, for example, and not invite Iran, which is one of the most important players in the region, makes no sense. So
mm-hmm.
We need a lot of change, but from this administration in the next 400 days, I don't expect to see very much of anything.
And Mel Goodman, Dick Cheney and George Bush don't really have a lot of humility, and the idea of a mea culpa seems quite foreign to them.
I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for that one.
But don't you think as a nation that we owe some apology to the Iranian nation for demonizing them and for lying? We know that that Seymour Hersh has told us that he heard the first inklings of this new revised intelligence estimate almost a year ago. So it had to trickle up to Bush and Cheney much sooner than Bush has acknowledged last week and much sooner than has now been reported, which is August, when Mike McConnell allegedly went to Bush and said, some new information coming in, but don't ask me any questions about it.
Right. Now, of course, the White House already, within 24 hours, changed that one. They made the president, well, the president actually made himself look foolish when he said he was told by the Director of National Intelligence, I have new information, but he didn't understand or didn't get what that new information was. That shows Bush's staff is absent without leave.
Well, now, Mel, wait
Bush
a minute.
Look rather idiotic.
Mel, it was August. Bush takes August off.
August, right. So this was, I assume, a conversation at the ranch.
Yeah.
And of course, that's when he was told about Bin Laden determined to attack the United States. That was
right.
Also in August. As
yeah.
you say, that's the month that Bush takes off. So none of that is really credible. But the important thing is he had that information, but nevertheless talked about World War III. And it's an irresponsible speech he gave in October. And Cheney, who had the same information that Bush did, because they both get the president's daily brief, which only goes to about six or seven people in Washington, they knew all of this information. But here is Cheney talking about serious consequences if Iran continues its nuclear weapons program. Well, they stopped it in 2003, and I think there we have very good evidence.
Mm-hmm. Scott Dick, you and I have been talking about the saber-rattling toward Iran for well over a year now. What was your reaction when you first heard about this revised NIE?
Well, I thought perhaps maybe the intelligence community had finally come to their senses. You know, they're easily manipulable by Bush and Cheney, and I guess they appeal to their patriotism and their honor, as the government always does when they're trying to get soldiers and you know, people like that to do more work with less money. So maybe this time they weren't falling for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It made them all look bad. It made them look terribly incompetent. And we spend billions, and I think the American people, rightfully so, said, why are we spending all this money when they can't even get little, you know, the big stuff right? What is it for?
Mm-hmm. Now, Mel Goodman, the Bush administration is claiming that this turnabout is evidence of the reform of intelligence and the restructuring under the intelligence czar, first Negroponte and now McConnell. And on the other hand, it appears to me that the intelligence community somehow was able to deliver an ultimatum that they were not going to be used again to falsely lead us into a military confrontation, and that this information was going to come out one way or the other. And Cheney, I imagine a conversation. Cheney, you can own it, or you can be defensive about it. What's your choice? What's your speculation, Mel, on how this actually evolved?
Well, my sense is that reform of the intelligence community had nothing to do with this. Restructuring had nothing to do with this. And I have felt all along that to look at wiring diagrams as an answer to our problems is to look in the wrong place. The problem will only be solved when you have people with courage and with conviction and know what the job of an intelligence officer is, and that it's all about having a moral compass and telling truth to power. And here, the real hero in this is a deputy to the Director of National Intelligence, a former State Department bureaucrat by the name of Thomas Finger. And I think what Thomas did was to allow the working analysts at the middle levels of the government just do their job, and therefore catch up to what the international arms inspectors, particularly at the International Atomic Energy Agency, and what the British, French, and German intelligence analysts, and even the Russian intelligence analysts, because remember, President Putin was in Iran about 6 weeks ago and says there is no evidence of a nuclear weapons program. And of course, when you're talking about who the White House should apologize to, I would only start with Iran. We owe apologies all around the international community, because what the CIA is doing now is just catching up to what has been the conventional wisdom and the consensus within international intelligence circles. So again, it doesn't matter how you structure this intelligence community. If you don't have honest people, it's not going to make any difference. But if you do have honest people, it doesn't matter how bad the structure is. And here, this is a case of good people, honest people, people who understood what the mission of intelligence is, simply doing their jobs.
But Mel, how did Cheney permit this? This is what is really leading me to wonder if there is some kind of a trap here or some other surprise that I can't quite see.
I don't see a trap. I think what's been happening, and it's been going on for the past year, and in many ways, and I'm probably the last person who wants to admit this, but the appointment of Bob Gates as Secretary of Defense, I think, was a turning point, and that was a year ago. December 2006 was his confirmation battle, and I thought his nomination.
Yeah, you're not a leader of the Gates fan club.
No, I think, as I say, I do this with no great enthusiasm, but I have to do it, I think, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Bush was put into the Pentagon. Rumsfeld was forced to resign because, actually, he believed that the war was a failure, and he was looking for ways to essentially reduce the war.
Right.
But Bush really turned to his father this case, and his father said, get Bob Gates. He was the only person who George Bush was going to consider. If Bob Gates had turned down the job, which I don't think he could, but if he did turn down the job, I think Rumsfeld may have been left in the Pentagon. There were no other candidates.
Peter, let me jump in here.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
But let me just finish one point.
Go ahead, Milton.
Cheney has lost a lot of his soldiers. I mean, he's lost Scooter Libby. He's lost Douglas Feith. He's lost a lot of the neocons in government. Paul Wolfowitz is gone. All of the people who've been with Cheney for a very long time. So he's lost a lot of his soldiers.
Go ahead, Scott.
When was the NIE released?
Monday of this week.
This is very interesting, Peter, because what we're going to play later are clips from Casey's briefing on Tuesday, the very next day. I think this is where the intelligence agencies and the military have come together and said, enough is enough. And I think when you listen to the clips, Peter, you'll know what I'm talking about, because he comes out and says, we are deploying at an unsustainable rate. And it's in an open session at the Brookings Institution, and the Pentagon Channel put it out there for everybody to listen to.
All right, we're going to get that later this hour with Scott.
Can I just
commentary.
Say something? Because I really agree with Scott on this point. I think the battle that's going on, the clandestine battle that's going on in Washington, is between the White House and the National Security Council against the uniformed military. And it's been interesting to watch what the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Michael Mullen, has been saying, and the head of CENTCOM, our forces in the Middle East, Admiral Fallon, who are opposed to the use of military force in Iran. And you have to give Gates credit. He appointed both these people. Rumsfeld never would have appointed these people, and they never would have endorsed the comments they've been making that not only include we don't need another war, in this case Iran, and references to Iran cutting its deliveries of roadside explosives and munitions to Iraqi forces. So there is something going on, and I agree that it's the uniformed military leading the way with a great deal of courage, which they didn't have in 2002 and 2003 when we immorally went to war against Iraq.
That's Mel Goodman along with Scott Dick. I'm Peter B. Collins. More in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Let me welcome you to Planet Cruise.
It's the all-new Planet Cruise Comedy Hour at the Quumba Jazz Center this Friday, December 7th. I'm your humble host, Richard Stockton.
And I don't just sleep in my car. I wake up in the neighborhood of my choice.
We'll have comedian Andrew Norelli.
Don't turn the lights on. I was going to take her home.
The Planetoids, the Great Morgani, and Ukulele Dick.
Not Ukulele Dick!
Peter B. Collins. Dr. Rupert Opie, Phil the Security Guard, the Eclectic Company, the Outpatient Players with Simone Cox and Sound Effect Master Sven Davis.
They let the players out!
Ron Wilson, the Planetoid Band, all comedically capturing the spirit of Santa Cruz. Karen Babbitt. That's Friday, December 7th at the Columba. Be sure and buy your tickets early. That's at Gateway's Books, Streetlight Records.
Ooh, save $5.
That's Friday, December 7th, 8 o'clock at the Columba.
I got a ticket. I can walk in.
You the Planet Crew.
You're gonna laugh your glutes off.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas,
hey, this
Carmel
is Stephanie Miller.
Sir,
you're listening to the station
Patty
that
Ross
encourages you to think for yourself.
I'm hardworking, experienced,
AM 540
and I
KRXA.
Care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, PattyRossCarmel.com.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
Cynthia from Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Carmel, and we have something new, a unique opportunity to give yourself or someone special the gift of consultation with nationally respected life coach and career mentor, Raymond Davi. Paul and I know firsthand the empowerment Ray has to offer. Discover how changes can propel you where you want to go in the areas of personal and career growth or planning goals for ongoing success, as well as insights for your work-life balance. Don't hesitate. Call and reserve your 90-minute appointment or purchase a gift certificate now. Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden, 624-4955 or www.pilgrimsway.com.
Well, there goes that traffic music, so that means it's time to rock and roll with a little news here. Let's take a look at a problem being reported in Prunedale. It's Crazy Horse Canyon. It's crazy there at 101. It's a car and a pickup truck clear to the right shoulder. CHP is on scene there. Also, Rio Del Mar. It's northbound 1 at Rio Del Mar Boulevard. It's metal debris being reported there. Also, Santa Cruz, southbound 17 and Highway 1, we've got a two-car fender bender being reported. In fact, it's in the right lane, CHP already on scene. If you're traveling in Live Oak, Capitola Road at 30th Avenue, heads up, two-car fender bender also being reported as well. And eastbound 129 between Watsonville and Aromas, you may see some slow-and-go traffic there. So far, traffic on Highway 1 southbound between Monterey and Carmel checking in with pretty good-looking conditions. That's traffic on KRXA.
The Peter B. Collins Show continues. I'm glad you're listening. Scott Dick is with us as usual, our regular contributor on military and veterans issues. And we're joined this half hour by Mel Goodman, a former CIA analyst. And Mel, you published an op-ed in the Baltimore Sun today. People can find it at baltimoresun.com. And you wrote this line: Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney were aware of the new findings, that's in the National Intelligence Estimate, before they used their provocative language. And, of course, the dates were in October when Bush talked about World War III and Cheney. He said, quote, "We will not allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon." So what did these guys know? When did they know it? And how long have they been lying?
Well, they had to know this information over the summer because that's when the most sensitive information came in, even though I'm told there was good information available in the spring. But by the summer, I think there was no arguing with the conclusions that they had stopped the program going back 4 years. So they were briefed through the most sensitive journal that the CIA produces, which is the President's Daily Brief, which goes to the President, the Vice President, Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, and the National Security Advisor, and maybe one or two others, including the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs. So over the summer, they have known this, but still went ahead with this provocative language, which I find unconscionable, and it shows the degree to which Cheney is willing to put aside all law, all rational thinking, to achieve his purposes, which I think is to look for another military front. The fact that we're losing two wars already in Afghanistan and Iraq probably means nothing to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking for a way for another military engagement, essentially to save the Bush presidency.
Well, given the way the sabers were rattled, particularly by Cheney, was this a last-ditch effort by intelligence to stop us from rushing headlong into a military conflict with Iran based on bad intelligence, which is just a terrible replay of Iraq?
No, I think people overestimate the degree to which policy decisions get involved in the timing of intelligence estimates. It may look that way, but I think most of this timing is serendipitous.
Mm-hmm.
I think the intelligence estimate was going along on its own course, which was a very slow one because of the sensitivity of the issue and not wanting to appear to be sticking a finger in the eye of the president and the vice president over a very sensitive matter. But I think the intelligence community stuck with its brief, plotted along as they usually do in a very incremental way, and they produced this report in December, I think months after they had the information. But it is supportive of what I think the Secretary of State would prefer and probably the Secretary of Defense would prefer and certainly what the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs would prefer,
mm-hmm.
which was to avoid another military engagement, this one with Iran, which would be a far more difficult foe than the one we face in Iraq, where we're facing one of the longest wars in the history of the United States.
Yeah, Scott, do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Mel, what would you like to add? We have about a minute remaining regarding this remarkable shift in our...
Well, I think there's some loose ends here that aren't being addressed. It's, once again, to go back to an intelligence issue, it's really important that the Senate and the House Intelligence Committees bring in the major players at the CIA within the intelligence community to find out why it took 4 years to reverse their thinking on the nuclear weapons program, despite the beginning of evidence that did come in, and why 2 years ago they were saying with very poor evidence, they were saying with high confidence, this is exactly what Iran was doing, building a nuclear weapons program, and that they couldn't be deterred. So I think in terms of methodology, we should give the CIA some credit and some willingness to tell truth to power, but they obviously haven't fixed all of the problems of the CIA, because 4 years is too long to get the story out. And 2 years to be reversing themselves, as you say, 180 degrees different, both times having high confidence, something is wrong with that kind of analytical methodology.
Yeah.
I think, Peter, they just waited until after the 2004 election.
Well,
if they would have announced that before, that the fear factor would have gone down.
Well, it would have been the 2006, yeah, the midterm last year. Let's take a break, and we'll return with Scott Dick. Mel Goodman, thank you for your counsel today.
Thank you, Peter. It's always good being with you. Good night, Scott.
Good night, Mel.
More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And Scott Dick's going to share some tape of General Casey's comments.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
He said it would be different from Kennedy's speech, and he meant it. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Republican candidate Mitt Romney took on the issue of his Mormon faith today and said, "Yes, I am a Mormon, and whatever people think of my faith, I will remain a Mormon."
"They would prefer it if I would simply distance myself from my religion or disavow one or another of its precepts. That I will not do."
In 1960, when JFK took on the issue of his Catholicism, he said the same thing.
"Nor do I intend to disavow either my views or my church in order to win this election."
But where JFK went on to talk about a strict separation of church and state, Romney said the wall had become too opaque.
"The notion of the separation of church and state has been taken by some well beyond its original meaning. It's as if they're intent on establishing a new religion in America, the religion of secularism. They're wrong."
JFK mentioned specific issues of interest to Catholics, including birth control, and said this:
"I will make my decision in accordance with what my conscience tells me to be in the national interest, and without regard to outside religious pressure or dictates."
Mitt Romney said the same thing, but with a little different slant.
"I will take care to separate the affairs of government from any religion, but I will not separate us from the God who gave us liberty."
What does that mean? It means mangers and menorahs are back. And as for the Supreme Court,
"Our greatness would not long endure without judges who respect the foundation of faith upon which our Constitution rests."
Now this.
Now you can dial a diamond and save half by calling Empire Diamond at 1-800-SAVE-HALF. Over 70 years in the Empire State Building, they'll sell diamonds wholesale without a middleman's markup. That's right, GIA-graded diamonds at half the price of famous high-end jewelers. Qualified buyers may have diamonds sent to their home or office for a free 10-day no-obligation inspection and get a 60-day money-back guarantee. So save half on your diamond. Visit at dialadiamond.com or call 1-800-SAVE-HALF. That's 1-800-SAVE-HALF.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Jim's Restaurant is celebrating its 8th anniversary at 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Join the party. Enjoy Jim's lunch specials for just $5.75 and dinner specials for only $6.50 per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
I love coffee, I love tea. That's why Coffeetopia's the place for me. Coffee and tea, the honey and me. At Coffeetopia.
Coffeetopia at 1723 Mission Street and 3701 Portola Drive in Santa Cruz offers the finest in handcrafted espresso drinks, whether it's a traditional Italian-style cappuccino or a sweet caramel macchiato. We offer a range of full-leaf teas, a choice of chais, including our new Zawadi African chai, and organic coffees. Coffeetopia also carries local baked goods fresh daily, including French-style pastries. Or try a toasted bagel with one of our exclusive non-dairy bagel spreads, either garlic dill or smoked tofu. Coffeetopia, Santa Cruz's oldest internet cafe, offers both free wireless and computer terminals for those who need them. Coffeetopia. Remember, we're here to help.
At Coffee, Coffee, Coffeetopia.
On August 28, Todd Endress was almost eaten alive by an 18-foot great white while surfing on Monterey Bay. A pod of 15 dolphins formed a wall between Todd and the shark, otherwise he would have died. ISARF, the International Shark Attack Research Fund, is a nonprofit foundation spearheaded by Todd to find ways to keep surfers, swimmers, and divers safe in our oceans without harming the shark. If you'd like to help, please go to ISARF.org to make your tax-deductible donation. That's ISARF.org.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Oh, man, look at my life. 24 and there's so much more. Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two. Love lost, such a cost. Give me things that don't get lost, like a coin that won't get tossed, rolling home to you.
No particular reason for this Neil Young song. I just like it. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We continue now with Scott Dick, our regular contributor on military and veterans issues. I want to thank Mel Goodman for sharing his intelligence. After all, he served at the CIA for almost 15 years and has a great authority when it comes to those issues. Scott, anything you want to follow up on related to the national intelligence estimate before we move on to General Casey's comments?
Well, I was just saying that, Peter, at the break, that... If our intelligence agencies were honest and fast, I think we would have heard something before the presidential election in 2004 that the Iranians had stopped their nuclear weapons program. Mm-hmm. That's what I was saying.
I see. Okay. I thought maybe you were talking about the 2006 elections, but what were, you know, the outlines of the intelligence are starting to be defined a little bit, and apparently the U.S. came into possession of some notes of senior military officials and meetings that they attended, and according to today's New York Times, again, this is all unattributed, and so we can't rely on it to a great degree, but what they are informing us is that they intercepted these diaries or memos or other documents that showed that senior military officials in Iran were very upset that the nuclear development program had been suspended, and that this was the information that more recently came into U.S. possession. But the earliest I've heard that that occurred was from Seymour Hersh, which places it in the fall of 2006. So perhaps it was available to U.S. intelligence before the November 06 elections, but it doesn't appear, again, based on the sketchy info that we have right now, that it was available in 2004.
Peter, it's very interesting because you've had Dr. Beeman on the William Beeman on the show.
Yes, we have.
And we've talked about the real lack of power that Ahmadinejad has. And doesn't it seem odd that we couldn't get this information before and then suddenly we have it? It strikes me as moderate Iranians in the government leaking those to our intelligence, to some other third-party intelligence agency, and it floating over to our CIA. That, because he has no real power, and the last thing the Iranians, moderate Iranians want is a conflict, is a military conflict with the United States, contrary to what our administration says.
And if I've got my facts right, I believe that Ahmadinejad was elected in 05 or 06, so that the suspension of the program occurred before he became the president of Iran.
And he is serving, you know, most of his statements serve a domestic political agenda for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he doesn't have any military authority, and that's something that Bush and Cheney refused to acknowledge, but it's a fact of the way the Iranian government is set up. So it's just interesting how suddenly there's no information, then we happen to intercept, you know, how do you intercept a diary?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds fishy. It sounds like it was just handed over and said, look, here's the proof that we don't have a program.
Well, but the 05 intelligence estimate was based on a stolen laptop that,
mm-hmm.
that said there was a program.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think we can all concede that Iran is a challenging target for our intelligence agencies, and that it's fair to give the intelligence community some latitude, but not this kind of whiplash.
No, I would say that there's some probably good intel work being done on the behind the scenes, and a lot of people would rather avoid a military conflict in Iran, and that includes the Iranians and some third-party intelligence organizations as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Peter, I just want to bring a little bit of interesting news, and something I try to avoid is reading the Washington Post. I mean, sorry, the Washington Times,
mm-hmm.
the Mooney paper.
That's right.
But they're reporting that Iraqi officers have gone missing in the U.S. They were being trained as part of a special intelligence and training program, and have run away and are seeking asylum in this country or have disappeared altogether.
How many?
From my little blurb, it doesn't say, but what concerns me is that part of a cell, a strike back cell? That would be very worrying to me if I was the Department of Homeland Security. Now, they'll probably ignore it and keep, you know, a French student out of the country.
Yeah. Where were these people being trained?
Doesn't say from what I see.
So it's a short blurb. Is this the Army Times?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
The early bird brief.
Mm-hmm.
So the Washington Times is reporting that this is that they're missing.
Wow. Well,
that's not good.
No, it's not. We'll have to keep an eye on that one. Now, we've got a little time in this segment here for your sound bites from General Casey. Why don't you set this up? He gave a speech at the Brookings Institution in Washington.
On Tuesday, he went over there in his battle dress uniform. He didn't even dress up. It was a packed house, and he was an invited guest speaker, or you know how the invitations work. Maybe he called them and said, I need to come talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what he had to say in the first 10 minutes. I'm not playing 10 minutes, but in the first 10 minutes. He was very interesting. Here we go. General Casey.
There is no question that the Army is stretched as a result of more than 6 years at war. And as a result of that stretch, the force, and particularly the families, are stressed. And I wrestled very hard to find the right word to describe the condition of the Army that was stretched and stressed. And the term I came up with was out of balance. That the Army today is out of balance. We're consumed by the demands of the current operations, and as a result, we're not able to do the things to prepare for the future and to sustain the all-volunteer force.
We are not prepared to sustain the all-volunteer force.
So is that suggesting he wants a draft?
I think it's a different kind of code.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, one conflict is enough. And if there was some kind of unintended consequence of bombing Iran, we couldn't sustain any kind of deployment. And this is very interesting. Not only does he goes on to clarify, one of the things that we've been talking about, Peter, and Democrats in Congress have been talking about, is that there's too short of time for soldiers on once they get back to the United States, once they're redeployed. And he says this. Now, we've been saying this, and the Department of Defense, when it was being run by Rumsfeld, was saying, no, they have plenty of time. And I think this is interesting. This is 13 seconds long. Here.
Go ahead.
Between deployments is too short, one, for the soldiers to adequately recover, and two, so that they can conduct the full spectrum of training so they're ready to operate across the spectrum of conflict.
I want to put a face on this. I met an Army major who remained nameless. He was in the 25th ID, and he was part of a 12-month deployment. His first was in Kandahar in Afghanistan. The second was in Iraq. And the 25th ID is in Hawaii. Married. And when his unit was extended, his wife said, screw this, I'm done staying here. And she moved back to Florida. So there's a face there's a casualty, not mm-hmm. just the combat casualty, but the casualty of families that are being riven apart by multiple deployments.
Well, and the reservists and National Guard members who never expected to serve multiple tours or tours of 15 months, many of those are, you know, losing their jobs, losing businesses, and losing their families through divorce.
And so now you have the chief of staff of the Army coming out and saying, yeah, our troops aren't staying home long enough. And, you know, for professional soldiers, like field grade officers, they're even more, their ties with their families are stronger. They work harder. So these young enlisted folks, I mean, the toll, I would like to see an honest assessment of the divorce and rates and the abuse rates that are happening when these kids come back from their first deployment, their second deployment, their third deployment, and how all of the stresses that they have when they come back, financial, social, cultural, come out to play. And it's a toll we're not talking about. But at least the Bush administration is not talking about.
No, you're right. It's a very important set of issues. And we've got to add to that depression, PTSD, and suicide, all of which are climbing astronomically among the population of Iraq and Afghanistan vets.
Absolutely. And then we've had this constant drumbeat that the Army is going to cease operations because the Congress doesn't support the troops.
Yeah.
Or am I crazy? And so Tuesday, amongst in between all of this crap coming out of Cheney's lips and out of Bush's lips, we have General Casey. I want folks to listen carefully. Peter, listen carefully.
Right now, the time at home is only sufficient for them to focus on their counterinsurgency mission because they're going right back to Iraq or Afghanistan. Our equipment, we're using it about five times the normal rate. That's not sustainable over time. We've got great support from Congress to begin resetting that equipment, but we're using that at a sustainable rate. Now,
what did he say, Peter?
He said we're using it five times faster than normal. It's not a sustainable rate.
And before that?
We're getting some help from Congress.
We're getting great support from Congress, is what he said. And so, you know, somebody's lying. And I trust General Casey 100 times more than I trust. And I met him when he was a colonel, because he came to Bosnia and worked with us there. I know him. He's an honorable guy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the kind of stuff that Rumsfeld would have never, never allowed.
Yeah. Interesting. You got one more soundbite, right?
I do. It's a little bit longer. And this is the
we got time. We got time.
This
so go
is the
ahead.
Unsustainable rates where it really gets into it. And folks should be very concerned because later on in his briefing, he talks about the persistent nature of this new kind of warfare, and we are not prepared for it. So let's just listen to this.
And we are, as an institution, suffering from the cumulative effects of 6 years at war. So we're out of balance. Now, what do I mean by out of balance? We're deploying at unsustainable rates. Several months ago, we increased our deployment, our boots on the ground time, we call it, to 15 months. We needed to do that to support the requirements of the commanders, to give our soldiers and families some predictability, and most importantly, to ensure that the soldiers that were deploying had at least 12 months at home so they could properly prepare to go. Now, we did that with the full understanding that it was temporary. We can't sustain that. We have to come off of that. We're working that very hard. I think you can understand that when we decide to come off it, we're going to be darn sure that we're not going to have to go back. And so I expect an announcement on that here in the next 3 or 4 months as we watch the situation there on the ground.
Now, we're not getting any of this out of the regular media or out of the right-wing media. That's General Casey coming out of his lips. We're not hearing that anything except for on your show, Peter.
Well, in fact, what we're hearing is a confusing array of information because on the one hand, they tell us the surge is working and that therefore we can start to bring some troops home. So there's a brigade coming home in December because it was scheduled to come home a year ago.
Right,
yet
now, Peter,
yet they're claiming that current circumstances permit this return. Go ahead.
What I'm hearing out there is that there is a brain drain going on in the middle management officer and senior NCO corps, especially what they're saying is people who have the intellectual capacity to get out and get jobs or go to different specialties inside the military are fleeing in droves. And what they're giving the others are opportunities to go to the National Training Center in Fort Irwin or the JRTC. That's the ground one out in the east somewhere, I forgot. And he said it's almost literal. They start that 12-month dwell time stopwatch practically when your foot touches American soil off the jet. And he said you'll be sent to a mobile training team 12 months, almost to the day after you arrive. That's no way to treat these guys. So everybody who's leaving, everybody who can leave, is going someplace else. And that's why there's that $35,000, $40,000 bonuses to try to keep those middle guys, which is the core of the combat army, because captains are the last officers who really fight on the battlefield.
We got to take a break, and we'll return with Scott Dick. He's our contributor on military and veterans issues. Lines open if you'd like to talk with us at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. Pacific storms pounding the left coast this weekend. I hope you're batting down and keeping dry.
A radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540, KRXA, 6 a.m. weekdays.
It's all the excitement of a presidential primary right here on the Central Coast. Come to the first presidential primary in the nation in Salinas, Sunday, December 9th. It's a Democratic presidential straw poll with representatives of the Democratic campaigns and hundreds of their supporters packing the floor. The first presidential primary in the nation, Sunday, December 9th from noon to 5 at Sherwood Hall in Salinas. Information at ModerayCountyDemocrats.org or 262-0367. That's ModerayCountyDemocrats.org or 262-0367.
Making me invisible, invisible.
Yeah. Several weeks ago, I saw UFOs over Monterey Bay using night vision equipment. If you want to see UFOs, contact me, Bob Oliver, and listen to the Bob Oliver Show, The Quantum Leap, Saturday mornings at 11 a.m. Recent polls show that 93% of the people do not trust our government. Tune in Saturday at 11 a.m. for answers and discussion. We are not alone. Our history books are not accurate. Call in, add your piece to the puzzle. Night vision goggles, UFOs. That's simple. Think for yourself. The Bob Oliver Show, The Quantum Leap, Saturday, 11 a.m. on Progressive Radio, KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
For my homeless faces, kick to the cracks of city places. Got plenty of space, so what's the basis?
At Homescapes Carmel, we search far and near to find the best locally made, American made, and imported furnishings the world has to offer. I'm Thompson Lang, and my brother Bo and I scour the globe to find unique, unusual, and unmatched merchandise to help you personalize your home and garden. We're proud to offer a variety of products such as cabinets, lamps, and vases made with bamboo, plantation teak, and other renewable and reclaimed resources. These items are beautiful, durable, and most of all, eco-friendly. So stop by Homescapes Carmel on the corner of 7th and Dolores, or visit homescapescarmel.com.
I believe you need a little traffic, so we're going to give it to you right now. We are going to start off with a problem being reported right now in Live Oak, Capitola Road at 30th Avenue. It is a crash being reported there, CHP on the scene. Also in Santa Cruz, southbound 17, right at Highway 1, two-car crash blocking the right lane there. CHP also on scene, minor injuries being reported. And Prunedale, northbound 101, a crazy horse canyon. It's a two pickup trucks involved in a crash. Everything is off to the right-hand shoulder. And a lot of activity right now in Soledad, northbound 101 at Front Street. Pickup truck spun out and then is blocking the merge lane. Southbound Highway 1 between Monterey and Carmel at this point, looking pretty good. And that is a look at traffic on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and this portion is brought to you by the Organic Wine Company. Log on to organic, ecowine.com, or call 888-ECO-WINE and talk to Veronique. They've got some great holiday specials to help you celebrate. And I understand that Veronique Raskin is going to be appearing on Scott Dick's Tasty Planet this weekend.
That is a fact. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, that should be a lot of fun. Saturdays on KRXA 540, and you can log on to KRXA540.com if you want to listen online. Let's take some calls. We've got Bill in Sacramento. Thanks for holding, Bill. You're next
hi,
here.
How are you doing?
Good
hi,
to hear
Bill.
From you.
Wow, this is really interesting. Can I back up just for a minute to go back to what that question you guys were asking, like why are they going into
sure,
why
Bill,
do they want to go into Iran?
Bill, slam it into reverse and hit the gas. Go ahead.
I just wanted to remind you something that happened some time ago. Back when the war first started, there was mention of a plan that had come about in Israel, I guess, and had spawned the PNAC. And as a result of that, this program was called Clean Break. And what it was entailed was they were going to redraw the whole Middle Eastern area. And part of their philosophy was for the global domination was to go in and privatize Iraq, put air bases there so they'd have flyover rights, access to Asia, and control of all the oil resources there. And so that's what's happened. They put bases there. They've got the biggest embassy, et cetera, et cetera. The plan required them to also go in and make sure that Iran and Iraq, who had threatened to use oil as a weapon, to not go switch over to the euro, because that was going to mess up the World Bank situation.
I'm aware of that. Yeah.
And because the war got bogged down a little bit and the truth started to come out, things got slowed down. But they still needed to go into Iran to pull this whole plan off. Gates, remember, was one of the original people that worked with Bush's father. He was CIA, and he worked for Carter, and he was part of his National Security Council.
Yeah, Gates does go back that far.
Yeah,
he was a Soviet expert.
Right. He met with H.W. Bush over in Italy, and the Shah of the Ayatollah Khomeini and all of them to put together that. They held the prisoners over there until Reagan.
No. Let's not give Gates too much credit here. It was Bill Casey who actually met in Paris with representatives of the Ayatollah, the so-called October surprise that caused the hostages to be released on inauguration day.
Right. That was. But there was also another meeting. The Russians verified it and collaborated that they met in Italy also.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, and so he knew the people in Iran, and that was the only, like you say, the only choice that he, working with his father, to replace Rumsfeld, because
mm-hmm.
they all go back to the same group, as far back as Nixon even. This whole
right.
team comes
oh, yeah.
from there.
You're right.
But
mm-hmm.
anyway, this new thing of disaster economics and privatization of America is still behind all of this too. In the process of breaking down our National Guards, and you were talking about some of the people leaving the military, a lot of them are leaving for bonuses to go join these private organizations, some of which you remember New Bridge Strategies,
mm-hmm.
With Joe Albaugh and all that.
Right.
There's a whole bunch of them over there. If you go on and look for contractors, you'll find all kinds of names, and most of these people are recruits from other states like Russia and Pinochet's group. I mean, they come from all over the globe. They're just mercenaries that are willing to fight for anybody who's
yep.
any corporation who's got the money.
South African, Sierra Leone, yeah.
Anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, Bill, you get one more point, then I need to move on.
Okay. Let's see. So anyway, they want to hold. They keep also coming up. You've noticed that they keep coming up with reasons to hold on to the bases that they've got there, power, and at the same time they're destroying no veterans benefits, like you were saying, no jobs for the returning guys.
Mm-hmm.
Suicide rate went up. This is all part of this strategy, though, to privatize America, and this goes back even in 2003 he wrote that executive order 13303, which created Iraq Inc. and said that it provided cover for them, even though it's illegal. It provided cover for anybody working as an agent of the United States to commit war crimes or do whatever. They couldn't be prosecuted.
Yeah, that was one of Bremer's decrees, too. Thank you, Bill. Great to hear from you in Sacramento today. Now to Leila. Leila, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air, Leila.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for and Scott for bringing, you know, the stuff out and progressive radio in general, because I just put my son on a plane yesterday morning to go back to Afghanistan.
Oh, my. Merry Christmas.
Bless you, yeah.
And he was only here for 3 weeks. He's been deployed since March. And he was only here for 3 weeks, which is kind of a cruel joke because it's like it takes him 2 weeks to adjust to even being back. And then by the time he's, you know, back to normal, he gets sent back.
Yeah.
And I can just imagine what it's like for the people who have children, because I have a 7-year-old, and to try to explain to her why her brother has to go back is just, it's hard to do.
Go ahead, Scott.
When is he supposed to redeploy?
He was deployed March 28th, and I thought he would probably be there through June, but he says he's supposed to come back March 15th.
It's possible that they're doing a 12-month there instead of 15.
Yeah.
It's just a turnaround to get them 12 months on, you know, dwell time, which does, you know, Peter, that's something else. These guys don't go home every day at 5 o'clock when they're at home 12 months.
Right.
They get a couple of weeks, 3 weeks or 4 weeks of leave where they come in half days, that kind of thing. And then they go back to the training cycle. And the training cycle goes back to 24-hour days, deployed down, you know, at their training area, wherever it is, going to the ranges, all that stuff they've been doing. They're right back in the mix, right back in the blender.
Lee Isla, we wish you the best, and our thoughts are with you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in today. Scott Dick, thanks for all your contributions. We'll talk to you again next week.
You're welcome, Peter.
Scott Dick here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up next, we're going to go live to Bali, Indonesia, and get a report on the climate conference right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Podcasts, email, pictures of him, peterbcollins.com. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, explain the value of wines made from organic grapes.
You know, I think that drinking organic wines is what Tony Robbins described as a class one experience. Wines made with organic grapes feel good. They taste extremely good, just like an organic tomato or a strawberry tastes usually better than a conventional counterpart. They are good. There's plenty of scientific evidence about the health benefits of drinking wine in moderation. Drinking organic wines also is good for other people in that you know you're supporting farmers. And last but not least, it's definitely good then for the higher good.
The Organic Wine Company. Log on to ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. With polls showing his Mormon religion is a concern for evangelical Christians, Republican presidential hopeful Mitt Romney made a speech today.
My church's beliefs about Christ may not all be the same as those of other faiths. Each religion has its own unique doctrines and history.
Romney said neither his church nor any other would influence his decisions as president. But CBS News correspondent Bill Whitaker says Romney may have missed the mark.
It was fairly odd for a speech that was called to speak about his religion that he spoke so little about his religion. Much of the speech focused on America's history of religious tolerance and religious freedom, and he was calling on Americans today to adhere to that tradition.
Richard Land of the Southern Baptist Convention is satisfied. He says this was like the speech John F. Kennedy gave to Protestant leaders when he was the first Roman Catholic to run for president.
John Kennedy didn't spend one sentence trying to define, describe, or defend Catholicism, and I don't think that it would be appropriate or even acceptable to ask a presidential candidate to do that concerning their personal religious beliefs.
Omaha police just released a recording made during yesterday's shooting at the Westroads Mall.
911, what's your emergency? Hello, 911.
No one answered, but the nature of the emergency quickly became clear. 19-year-old Robert Hawkins was firing at everyone in sight, killing 8 people before killing himself. The Bush administration's subprime mortgage bailout plan was unveiled today. This is Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson.
Under this streamlined approach,
up to 1.2 million subprime ARM borrowers will be eligible for fast-tracking into consideration for affordable, refinanced, or modified mortgages.
One modification might be a five-year interest rate freeze to keep payments from becoming unaffordable. Critics, including New York Senator Chuck Schumer, say it's too little, too late.
The president's plan would be available, for instance, to people who are current on their loan payments. That excludes one-fifth of all subprime borrowers and a much higher percentage of those likely to go into foreclosure right off the top.
The White House says the energy bill passed by the House today has no chance of being signed into law. While it would increase fuel economy standards for cars and trucks, Republicans say it would do nothing to encourage more oil and natural gas production. It would roll back tax breaks for oil companies, diverting the money to tax incentives for renewable energy resources. On Wall Street, stocks were sharply higher, the Dow up 174 points to 13,619, and the NASDAQ up 42 points to 2709, this despite a big jump in oil prices, up nearly $3 to $90.23 a barrel. This is CBS News.
Holidays getting closer. It's all right, there's a gift you'll find is perfect every time. Let's give out.
Let go of your shopping worries with Outback holiday gift cards. Give everyone on your list a taste of the bold, fresh flavors of Outback. Drop by tonight and leave your worries behind.
Let's give Outback tonight.
Get gift cards at any Outback or Outback.com.
Hi, my name's Bill, and I'm totally hooked on mobile banking. You see, with Wachovia and AT&T's newest feature, mobile banking is easy. Too easy. I mean, I'll be putting my phone on vibrate before a movie, and before I know it, I'm transferring funds, checking account balances, or even paying the bills. Seriously, who pays a bill during the previews?
Wachovia has taken mobile banking to a new level. To learn more, go to wachovia.com/mobile banking. Are you with Wachovia?
Wachovia Bank N.A. and Wachovia Bank of Delaware N.A. are members FDIC.
The music industry's big night is February 10th, and the stage was set today. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman reports.
As usual, the Grammy nominations include a bit of the old and a bit of the new.
Welcome to the good life.
Kanye West, who's now one of the music industry's established stars, leads the way with the most nominations, 8, including one for one of the top prizes, Album of the Year.
Welcome to the good life.
Amy Winehouse, the English rock star who has made headlines both on and off stage, has 6 nominations. One of her nominations, Record of the Year. Among those receiving 5 nominations, Jay-Z and Foo Fighters. Steve Futterman, CBS News at the Grammy nominations in Los Angeles.
Irish police have charged one man so far in the great beer robbery. A full truckload of suds, 450 kegs in all, was driven away from the Guinness Brewery in Dublin last month. Police say they've recovered some of the beer and other suspects are being sought. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
This holiday season, give the most eternal, unique gift of the year. Name a star after someone. I'm Rocky Moselle with International Star Registry. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com, we'll name a star after anyone on your gift list. The star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office, and we will send an incredible personalized gift package. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333, or visit starregistry.com for the gift that shines forever.
Pep Boys has fantastic savings on hundreds of great gifts this holiday season. For starters, you'll never get lost again with the Garmin Newbie GPS unit that features turn-by-turn voice guidance. It's an incredible $199.98. And oh, what fun it is to ride with the incredibly fun Razor 100-watt scooter for only $89.99 after mail-in rebate. Don't miss the hundreds of other great holiday values in this week's circular or at PepBoys.com. The Pep Boys holiday savings event is going on now. Season's greetings from Pep Boys.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We kick off this hour with a live report from Bali at the Climate Change Conference.
Well, there's a little something that's been freaking me. I read it in the news, I seen it on TV. It haunts me in the night and creeps me in the morning. A spooky little thing called global warming. indispensable amenities like hairspray, air conditioners, and SUVs, but causing big emissions, all of which are forming a spooky little thing called global warming.
Well, it was just 20 years ago this fall that yours truly got fired from a radio job in San Francisco, and I took my severance check and bought a ticket and took a tour of Asia. And one of my favorite stops was Bali, Indonesia. Indonesia is an archipelago of 12, 13,000 islands, and one of them is Bali. It's a beautiful place, and I spent about a week there, and sometime I'd love to go back. Martin Wagner is there right now. He's director of Earth Justice's International Program. He's based in Oakland, California, and he is there covering the conference that's underway right now. Martin, thank you for joining us today, and did we get you up real early in the morning or anything?
No, it's 9 o'clock in the morning here.
9 o'clock. How civilized. I'm glad to hear that. So give me your impressions of the conference to date, and in particular, the role of the United States of America.
Well, the conference, obviously, is about addressing global warming, and we had a presentation by about 200 scientists yesterday who reminded us that we're really in dire straits as a planet and a civilization if we don't get our act together very soon. And it's exactly that that this conference is about. There are 190 nations gathered here, as well as representatives from environmental and business organizations from around the world. And everybody is spending 2 weeks trying to come to some sort of plan for how we will move forward as a planet to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions and stop global warming. The meeting is partly about substance. In other words, how much are we really going to require which nations to reduce their emissions and by when? But the first priority for the nations is to really establish a process for negotiating those kinds of agreements by hopefully 2009, because right now the nations of the world have agreed, with the exception of the United States, to what is called the Kyoto Protocol, which is an agreement that establishes requirements for governments to begin to address global warming. And it creates some limits on the industrialized countries to actually meet some goals of reducing emissions by 2012. But those commitments end in 2012, and so the big question is, will the governments of the world agree that there should be additional cuts beginning in 2012? And the scientists yesterday really impressed upon us that if we don't make substantial cuts in the near future, we could be facing extreme consequences like rising seas and increased hurricanes and cyclones and droughts and floods. So everyone's here trying to make those kinds of agreements, and the United States is one of the big obstacles here.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be, I think a week or two ago, the United States thought that it would be coming here at least with one other member of its team of recalcitrant governments, which was Australia, which was the only other industrialized nation that had refused to agree to some kind of cuts on greenhouse gas emissions. And right before the meeting, last week, in fact, the Australians elected a new government, and the first act of the new prime minister was to ratify the Kyoto Protocol, which means that Australia has agreed that it should reduce its emissions. It should be bound to do so.
Well, that's another thumping for George W. Bush.
Well, that's right. And so the United States is really a problem here, because it refuses to agree to any kind of binding commitments, which the rest of the industrialized nations of the world have agreed to.
But Martin Wagner, don't we actually have like an axis of weevils, the U.S., China, and India, kind of playing a game of chicken, saying that we won't agree to hard limits on our emissions unless China and India do too?
Well, that's right. And China and India argue that they, first of all, are not responsible for the present warming, which is mostly true. The United States is responsible for 30% of the greenhouse of human-caused greenhouse gases that are in the atmosphere now, and 25% of the ones that are coming into the atmosphere today. The industrialized world is responsible for nearly all of the historic emissions, and countries like China and India are not responsible for the present problem, but they are. Their present emissions are growing. China is very close to the U.S. in actual emissions. But one thing to remember, and this is something that China and India and the other developing countries point out regularly, is that if you look at it on a per-person basis, there's a vast difference. In the United States right now, we emit about 23 tons of carbon dioxide per person per year. Mm-hmm. And in China, they emit about 4 tons. Per person per year. And China says, you know, it's a bit arbitrary to say that we should be measured on a national basis as opposed to a per person basis, which really perhaps has a little more justification. And then also, when the nations of the world made the Kyoto Agreement, they agreed that it was reasonable, for the reasons that I've just described, that the developing world should be assisted by the developed countries in meeting their obligations, and that their obligation to reduce emissions was contingent on two things. It was contingent on assistance from the developed world, both in terms of financial assistance and technical assistance, and it was contingent on the developed world showing progress in meeting their goals. And there has been almost none of either of those. Certainly none from the United States. The U.S. continues here, even this week, to refuse to participate in technology trades or to make that happen easily to China and other countries to help them reduce their emissions. And so there really is, you're right, there's an impasse, and both sides are playing hardball.
We're talking with Martin Wagner. He's in Bali, Indonesia, where the climate conference is underway. And, Martin, coming back just to a point you made a couple of seconds ago about the Chinese approach here of looking at this on a per capita basis, I find that kind of opportunistic, because it really is a function of government to reduce these emissions. And putting it across on a per capita basis, you know, suggests that we each have our own smokestack, and we can determine, you know, how much is coming out of it.
Well, you're right that governments set the policies, but the question that's relevant to whether you do it on a national emissions basis or a per capita basis is the question of how much each government should be responsible for reducing. And while we don't each have our own smokestack, the amount that our nation emits is due to how much each of us consumes. And so it really is as though we had our own smokestack. So, yes, governments have to take the responsibility and establish the policies, but they have to establish policies to reduce by an amount that is fair. And I think there is some basis for arguing that the developing countries should have some assistance from the developed world, and maybe get a little bit of a slower responsibility for reducing emissions.
All right, and on a slightly separate tack, I want to acknowledge the source here. I was listening to an interchange with Republican candidate Mitt Romney, who made the assertion that China is putting a new coal-fired power plant online at the rate of almost one per week. Now, I can't verify that figure, but let's just assume that there is a pretty active, aggressive program of building new coal-fired power plants in China. Are they trying to build up their infrastructure and their energy resources in advance of a clampdown? Or is it just responding to demand and the growth of their economy?
You know, I can't answer that for sure. Those numbers are accurate, I think. I've heard that it's one every other week. But in any case, it's a lot of new coal-fired power plants. And as you suggest, that is a serious problem for global warming. Coal is perhaps the worst. It is the worst energy source from a global warming perspective. There is certainly increased demand in China. There is a lot of development, economic and infrastructure development happening that is driving that need for electricity. I'll note that a lot of that, or at least a substantial substantial portion of that electricity is going to manufacturing goods that go to the developed world like the United States. One study I saw recently said that 30% of the emissions from China are due to manufacturing goods to come to the U.S. and Europe.
Yeah, that's right. Spraying lead paint on our toys takes a lot of energy.
I guess so.
What else would you like to add, Martin Wagner? We just have about a minute remaining. What other observations would you like to share from the Bali Climate Control Conference?
Well, I'd like to talk about two points of hope, because I don't want us to think that this is absolutely hopeless, although I think there are some major obstacles. One is that yesterday Germany announced a package of measures that would result in 40% reductions in greenhouse gases by 2020 and 88% reductions by 2050, which would get their per capita emissions down to 2 tons of carbon dioxide per person per year, which is really impressive, and I think it shows that there is a way through on the policy level. And the other thing is that there are hundreds of young people here who are involved in a serious way in advocating and talking to delegates, pushing their governments to take a stronger stand. And, you know, they really see what's at stake. They recognize that it's their world that is at issue. They're going to inherit it. And it just fills me with a lot of hope to see them here acting in such a serious way and really taking responsibility, even though it may not be really their fault.
Martin Wagner from Earth Justice, thank you for joining us today live from Bali, Indonesia.
Great to be here.
Nice to talk with you, sir, and thank you very much. We're going to take a break and return and open up the phones for the Free Speech Zone. It's your opportunity to comment on the issues that are on your mind. You can pick any subject, talk from any viewpoint, and call me from anywhere within the sound of my voice. Lines are open for you toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We'll take your calls after a quick break here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Commentary and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Let me welcome you to Planet Cruise.
It's the all-new Planet Cruise Comedy Hour at the Quumba Jazz Center this Friday, December 7th. I'm your humble host, Richard Stockton.
And I don't just sleep in my car. I wake up in the neighborhood of my choice.
Black comedian Andrew Norelli.
Don't turn the lights on. I was going to take her home.
The Planetoids, the Great Morgani, and Ukulele Dick. Peter B. Collins.
The outpatient player.
They let the players out.
All comedically capturing the spirit of Santa Cruz.
That's Friday, December 7th at the Columba. Be sure and buy your tickets early. That's at Gateway's Books, Streetlight Records.
Ooh, save $5.
You're going to laugh your glutes off.
Hi, this is Peter B. Collins. I'll be showing up Friday night in Santa Cruz for the Planet Cruise Comedy Hour, so why don't you? I want to see a contingent from Monterey and Pacific Grove. And I'm not sure what Richard Stockton has in mind, but you just heard him use the humble host moniker. Lawsuits will be filed.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, I'm J.R. Medina, owner of PG Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue in Pacific Grove. My family and I are proud to serve the finest selection of beer, wine, liquor, and non-alcoholic beverages in the Monterey area. Our store is evolving beyond adult and soft drinks. We serve freshly brewed Acme coffee, the finest breakfast burritos, and now Nathan's hot dogs. We're open daily. Come by and check out the big, big selection and low, low prices at PG Liquors. That's PG Liquors at 229 Grand in Pacific Grove.
All righty, then it's time for traffic. We're going to take a look at Live Oak. It's pretty live right now as far as a crash is concerned. The Capitol Road at 30th. There's a crash, two cars. It's on the shoulder. In fact, we've been telling you that for at least a couple of reports now. CHP on scene. They're going to wrap things up there. Prunedale, northbound 101 at Crazy Horse. Is still crazy there. It's two pickup trucks still off to the right-hand shoulder. Don't know why they're still there, but they are being reported there. Gilroy, Highway 152 at Lover's Lane. We have an overturned Jeep. It is on the right shoulder. And a southbound one between Monterey and Carmel, getting word of a little bit slow and go traffic there. This support brought to you by In-N-Out Burger for the freshest gift ideas of this holiday season. Give In-N-Out gift cards available all at In-N-Out locations. And that's a look at traffic on KRXA.
The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. We're heading into the free speech zone. I've got lines available if you'd like to call in and chat with me right now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. You dial 1-888-573-8372. And if you're listening in Portland on the mighty 620 KPOJ, it's Saturday, and you can send me an email, okay?
Somebody I never met, but in a way I know. From a picture show, man dies first, real people lost, what's the deal? This ain't how it's supposed to be, don't like no aborigines. Took a trip in Power Square, pop star died in hell. No back screaming, shouting, monsters came to flush him out.
And my personal email address is humblehost@peterbcollins.com. I'd love to hear from you. And there's lots to talk about. We kicked off the show talking about Bush's plan to help those who are victims of the subprime mortgage meltdown. And, of course, it only applies to a very narrow group of people. And it's, well, it's highly inadequate, but it's a start. And we heard from, I think, Erin in Sacramento earlier today, who said she contacted her lender and was able to renegotiate terms so she could hold on to her house before those mortgage monthlies increased. We also had a powerful half hour with Jonathan Haffetz from the NYU's Brennan Center about the Supreme Court hearings yesterday on the detainees at Guantanamo Bay. And Mel Goodman weighed in on the new intelligence estimate, which says Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapons program and hasn't for about 4 years. And we also talked to Martin Wagner in Bali just a few minutes ago. So all those subjects are up for grabs. Here's a breaking story just reported on Thursday's New York Times website. The CIA in 2005 destroyed at least two videotapes that documented the interrogation of two Al-Qaeda operatives in the agency's custody. And that occurred while the 9/11 Commission was asking for tapes like that and while congressional committees were reviewing the CIA's secret detention program. One of the tapes allegedly shows Abu Zubaydah, the first detainee in CIA custody, being subjected to severe interrogation techniques. So, snuff films? Torture films? We don't know exactly what was on them because they have been destroyed. And to tell you just how amazing this is, Philip Zelikow was the guy dispatched from the White House to keep the 9/11 Commission in check. And he is even upset that these tapes have been destroyed. Quoted in the New York Times, let me find this here. Let's see, Zelikow, here he is, from the 9/11 Commission. He says, the commission did formally request material of this kind from all relevant agencies, and the commission was assured that we received all the material responsive to our request, said Zelikow. No tapes were acknowledged or turned over, nor was the commission provided with any transcript prepared from recordings. Isn't that Beautiful. Dylan in Sacramento, thanks for calling the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. You might remember I called you before regarding a totally different issue. But this issue involves the oil companies and the tire companies. I have a book in my hand, and in regard is an anthology of all the, it's called It's a Conspiracy. And it has all the conspiracy theories that people purport.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the theories is actually not much of a theory, but a fact. And that is that the oil companies and the tire companies conspired to pull up all of the streetcar tracks in L.A., in I think probably other parts of California, to put in freeways so that they could sell more cars.
Yeah, that's true. I believe it was in the did it start in the 30s, and I think it continued into the 1950s.
Right. So I'm wondering whether whether the the U.S. government they sued the tobacco companies because of their false evidence that they put forward. Whether or not the oil companies and tire companies can actually be sued.
For collusion? What exactly would you sue them for?
Well, I would say, since we've got a huge problem with, in other words, they conspired against the people of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So what?
Well, but one of the things they did at that time was they gave incentives to the cities that would replace their electric trolley cars with diesel buses, and GM either gave discounts or subsidized the purchase of those transit vehicles as they were serving their self-interest and fleecing the public.
Right. Well, of course. So that's the reason for my call. I was wondering whether or not there's some lawyers out there who might be interested in starting a lawsuit against the oil and tire companies.
Mm-hmm.
To
all
try
right.
to, you know, well, I mean, well, why don't they reinstall those streetcars?
Well, I'll see if any volunteers surface to
okay, well, good luck.
To support your effort to sue them, okay?
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks
Bye.
A lot for the call today. Well, that's all we have time for in this segment. We'll take more calls here coming up shortly here. 888-5, Peter B. is my toll-free number. I'd love to hear from you this afternoon. 888-573-8372. For podcasts and other stuff, go to peterbcollins.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Don't your children deserve the very best for the holidays? Locally owned and operated, Thinker Toys has been the first holiday shopping stop for generations of parents in Carmel and Monterey, where owner Mark Phillips and his staff take great pride in personally serving every customer.
Thinker Toys is dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly. While Thinker Toys specializes in educational toys for newborns through six-year-olds, there's no better place than Thinker Toys to buy great toys for thinking kids of all ages. Make your child's Christmas, Hanukkah, Christmaka, Kwanzaa, or the holiday of your choice extra special with high-quality educational toys and games from Thinker Toys. Open every day at 10 a.m. in Carmel at 7th and San Carlos and in Monterey at the Del Monte Center. Drop by Thinker Toys today and tell Mark that Peter B. sent you. Happy holidays from Thinker Toys. Pacific Grove's Joe Rombie has turned his attention to pizza. Central Coast residents and visitors can now enjoy the finest pizza this side of Italy. Whether you crave the elegant simplicity of a pizza margherita or one of Joe Rombie's signature creations, like the Totally Chipotle, Crazy for Mushrooms, or famous Malrose, you'll fall in love with pizza all over again at Joe Rombie's La Piccola Casa Pizzeria, next door to Joe Rombie's La Mia Cucina on 17th Street in Pacific Grove. And with the holiday season approaching, if you're looking for the ideal private room for your next party, look no further than Joe Rombie's La Mia Cucina, with accommodations for groups of any size from 10 to 60. So for great dinners or private parties, it's Joe Rombie's La Mia Cucina, next door to Joe Rombie's La Piccola Casa Pizzeria. Click on joerombie.com or call 831-373-2416. Or for pizza, call 373-0129.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. We're in the free speech zone, but nobody's on the line. What am I going to do? Call me toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. The First Amendment still works. Yeah, we're bouncing off the satellite. Radio somewhere, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, beaming your way via satellite from San Francisco. Good to have you listening. And again, I do have lines available if you want to join us in the free speech zone at 888-573-8372. That's 888-5-PETER-B. Brian Urban is taking your calls today, and he, of course, is trying to save my digital butt by fixing our computer problems. It's been quite a week here. One of them came down with a virus, so PC1 is still in the hospital. PC2 is where PC1 used to be, but it doesn't have all the bells and whistles of PC1. You get it. We're doing our best here under difficult circumstances. So your calls are welcome here at 888-573-8372. We like to pause once a week and check in with reporter R.J. Schulman at the Post-Times-Sun-Dispatch. They have a new easy-to-use web address. It's ptsd1.blogspot.com. PTSD, the number one, blogspot.com. I'm sorry, ptsd1.blogspot.com. Did I get that right, RJ?
Yes, you did, Peter.
Well, accuracy is important, and you're a guy who really nails things. You monitor news events, and you always come away with more detail than we get in the corporate media. It's breathtaking.
Well, it wouldn't be if the mainstream media was doing their job, but someone's got to do it.
Yeah. So this was the big day that Mitt Romney gave his JFK speech about religion, and he's trying to ease concerns about people that his Mormon faith is somehow too scary for Americans to consider for an occupant of the White House. And in that speech, you came away with a whole different story that I haven't seen in the corporate media. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, he was trying to be JFK, but we all know JFK, and he isn't. So what his take was, the real report should have been what he really said, which was he said, I am not Mormon. I have never been Mormon.
Wait a minute. That sounds like Larry Craig.
Well, I think the Larry Craig syndrome has really affected more than one person, and it really seemed to engulf Mitt Romney today.
Now, you quote the Mitster here saying, the confusion about my faith is because I have a wide stance. I was praying in a Baptist church, but one of my legs ended up in a pew in a Mormon church next door. That's incredible.
When I heard him say that, I went, oh, this is going to be great. The media is going to be all over it. And once again, the Post-Times Sun-Dispatch is the only paper that's reported that. And you are the only radio show that's reporting this.
Now, were you able to find corroboration? Did you get any witnesses to his wide stance prayer?
Yeah, but they seem to have disappeared, and we think they're on their way to Guantanamo.
Oh, okay. You have another quote from Romney. Look, if I was a Mormon with this much money, would I have just one wife? I'm not saying all this to pander for votes from the religious right. I just want to know if I have a prayer to be able to convince the flock to get a vote of confidence that when elected president, that they'll know that I'll perform my duties religiously. Did he actually say that?
Yeah, I think there were some code words in there, wouldn't you say, Peter B?
It sure sounds like it to me. And, of course, Huckabee is using those code words, saying that he's the Christian leader running for president in Iowa. And he's been pretty snarky in the way he's contrasted himself with Romney and refused to answer questions like, well, do you think Mitt Romney is a Christian?
I think those are unfair questions, even coming from a reverend like Huckabee is. I just don't understand why the mainstream media is not calling him Reverend Huckabee.
Well,
they say Reverend Al Sharpton. And so, you know, if you're a reverend, you're a reverend.
I agree. You know, that's a very good point, RJ. I hadn't thought of that. Now, you also have a reaction story here. And once again, when you quote the president of the United States, the current guy, you always do it what we call verbatim. You don't scrub the quotes. You don't clean them up to make him sound smarter. So in reaction to the release of this national intelligence estimate that says Iran stopped working on a nuclear weapons program as far back as 2003, what did Bush have to say, and what's the quote?
Well, first of all, he said that it made him right. It meant since they weren't in, well, I'll read the quote. It's actually the best way to describe it. When he found this out and it became, a mainstream media story, he said, it doesn't mean that I was fabricating false lies that were untrue. It's that I'm on a need-to-know basis, and what I need to know is for you to know and for me to find out. Besides, I know them weapons must have been secretly hidden in a secret hiding place in one of them IRAB countries. So when they were found to be absolutely gone from Iran, then my lie was right all along that the mass weapons were in Iraq the whole time.
Wow, that's a stunning statement. And if you really figure out what he's saying there, he appears to be telling the truth, that he's been lying for a long time.
Right. Only his lies are true. It might be the short way of saying that.
Yeah.
Amazing. The other story that's going around is that when McConnell came in and told him that there was some new news about Iran, he didn't ask him what it was.
Yeah.
But I found out why, and that's because Bush said basically that he's afraid that people are going to make fun of him and call him Curious George, so he's become completely non-curious about everything, including whether some country has weapons that could cause World War III.
Well, you know, I'm not very sympathetic to Bush very often, RJ, but on this one I'll have to say I'm very sensitive about that Peter Punkin Eater story. And so for him to bristle at being called Curious George, we go to great lengths to escape these childhood stories.
I think that that's true. And so if there's any sympathy, it might be, not wanting to be called names from some kids' books.
Yeah. Well, RJ, I want to thank you for your report. I want to direct people to the website ptsd1.blogspot.com. We don't have time for your story about the California Republican scheme to take over electoral college votes, but I recommend it to people. Again, the website ptsd1.blogspot.com. We've been talking with reporter RJ Shulman. Thanks, RJ.
Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, good to hear from you. Appreciate it. Now we go back to your calls, and on line one, it appears to be Nancy in Winters. Hello, Nancy. You're on the Peter B. Collins show. John in Carmel Valley may still be holding.
Yeah, I am.
Hi, John. How are you today?
Okay. I picked up a book by Ann Coulter. It's called If Democrats Had Any Brains, They'd Be Republicans.
That's the new one. Did you get a deep discount on it?
I got it at a thrift store.
Oh, okay.
And I waited a couple of days before I actually bought it because I couldn't stand the notion of
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again.
Excuse me.
If you need help,
hold on a second,
hang up and then dial your operator.
We lost control of our technology. I apologize. So you got it at a thrift store. It's a new book, and it's already been read and discarded by somebody at a...
Well, there was Rush Limbaugh's The Way Things Ought to Be right next to it, so I'm guessing it was donated by somebody who had bought several of these kinds of books, and I had no familiarity with anything she'd written. So
I
wanted to compare it to Limbaugh, and she has a quote inside. There are a number of quotes just on the jacket, and about global warming, they have her quoted as saying, the temperature of the planet has increased about 1 degree Fahrenheit in the last century. So imagine a summer afternoon when it's 63 degrees, and the next thing you know, it's 64 degrees. Ah! Run for your lives, everybody. Women and children first. She's rivaling Limbaugh when he said that if humanity sat down tomorrow and tried to create global warming, they couldn't do it. It's that same can't believe it at any level mentality.
Yeah.
I found another book.
Wait, just before you move on from Ann Coulter, I want to let you know that last week we did our live broadcast from Eureka, and I took two boxes full of books that I had purged from my bush-bashing bookshelf, and I gave the Ann Coulter title to our friend Dave Goggin, who is the most frequent caller to the Peter B. Collins Show. And he's only called once this week, and I'm afraid that he's become captive to his Ann Coulter book.
Well.
So be careful with that, okay?
Okay, I will be careful.
Yeah. What else did you want to add, John?
Well, yeah, there's a painting in a fascinating book that is called Our Forgotten Past, and it deals with a lot of the ordinary people, even the peasantry's troubles and problems in the 18th, 19th centuries and back further than that. And they have a painting by a Sergei Ivanov that I had never seen before. Shows this peasant family that has fled from a famine somewhere else and is going to where they hope to find fertile land. But the man has died, and the wife has covered his face with an icon and several other things, and she's got her face to the ground just sort of looking like she's sobbing. And then there's a little girl, the only face you actually see head-on that must be theirs. Behind them is this wagon without a horse or an oxen, so you have to assume perhaps they've eaten it because they're starving. It's a very fine painting, and it does a better job of showing the trials of the peasantry. But one of the points the author makes is that Europe pretty much had solved the problem of famine, terrible famine, by the end of the 18th century, but Russia hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's government action in those other countries buying up and keeping the surplus to have on hand in time of need rather than relying on just the vagaries of a market economy like we have or are buying into. And it's very good about demonstrating how government does need to be active if we're going to avoid catastrophes, famines especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the free market is not really good at filling in the gaps when the free market fails.
Well, and people aren't as generous as they'd like to believe. The rich aren't that. Look at the potato famine. There's the example of examples. About 3 million people died, I think, in the 1840s.
Mm-hmm.
That's why so many immigrants from Ireland ended up in the United States.
That's what drove my people here. John, thank you very much. I'm going to jump now to line three. It's Bob in South Central Utah. Thanks for calling the PBC show.
Hey, hi. How you doing?
Pretty good, Bob.
All right.
What's on your mind?
Well, I've been listening to your show off and on, and I think it was a couple of callers ago called about
Yeah, he's looking for a lawyer to sue the oil and auto companies.
Yeah, and I'd been thinking about all the things that they'd been doing, you know, clear from the, you know, one thing, financing the think tanks. Maybe they're the un-American. Maybe they ought to be investigated for one thing, but not just that. That's kind of out there. But what about when they stopped the electric car in California years ago?
Right.
Well, we'd be all be in a lot better shape if we had that now. So would Ford or General Motors or whoever helped them. But it was essentially big oil. They should be some liability for that, you'd think, some way to calculate liability.
Well, it's never been explained to me why the car companies would kill the electric car, because, after all, they're into manufacturing. And whether it's fueled by electricity or gasoline or hydrogen, you know, Detroit has the opportunity to build a car and sell it for a profit. So why should they be so invested in oil as the source of you know, energy for a vehicle?
I don't understand that either, but somehow they were swayed, evidently.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you make a good point.
There were, you know, there's other things. The constant, you know, I was talking to your partner there, and, he, you know, years ago when I started college in the University of Utah, and, gosh, back in the 60s, it was on the forefront then. Global warming, that's, you know, we were all interested in it, you know. Somehow it's been put in the background now for 40 more years, 50 years. I hear people saying, we only heard about it 8 years ago. Well, mm-hmm. I hear them say that all the time on, you know, on different broadcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
But
well, so, Bob, I got to run to a break here. How are you listening to the program? Online?
Online.
I'm delighted. Can you become vice president for marketing in your zip code in Utah?
Sure, whatever. Anything I could do to help.
All right, just email 10 of your friends tonight and give them the link to listen online to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Sure will.
All right, Bob, thanks for checking
in.
I really appreciate it. That's great. Utah. We take a break and return to the Free Speech Zone. There's room for your call right now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. Where's Jake? Where is Jake? KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super grain nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Whole Foods Market in Monterey, Cornucopia Community Market in Carmel, Staff of Life in Santa Cruz, and New Leaf Markets in Santa Cruz and Capitola. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat, created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
All right, it's time for the last traffic report of the night. Always an exciting thing to do. but kind of bittersweet as well. Live, whatever I'm talking about, I don't know. Live Oak, Capitol Road 30th, still got that crash report there. CHP still on scene. And really, that's the only problem reported. In fact, northbound, southbound 17, checking in with no problems. Looking at Highway 129 eastbound between Watsonville and Aromas, you may encounter slow-and-go traffic there. Eastbound 25 slows out of Gilroy into Hollister. And looks like southbound 1 between Monterey and Carmel, traffic pretty good at this point. It's somewhat moderate. And so that certainly is some good news there. And this report is brought to you by the friendly folks at, of course, Garlique. Keep your doctor happy and yourself healthy. Exercise, eat wisely, and take Garlique every day.
Show continues. At the beginning of our program tomorrow, we are scheduled to talk with California Congresswoman Hilda Solis with some good news about the energy bill working its way through the Congress. That's at the beginning of the program tomorrow here on the PBC show. More of your calls now. We go to Ernie in Monterey. Thanks for your call, Ernie. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter, I think once a month you ought to have a three-hour show with all your music. You sure play some good stuff.
Oh, well, thank you. And up in Eureka last week, I was floored because a woman came up and was able to name one of the instrumental tunes that we play, Sex by Berlin.
Yeah, I got the one about Neil Young, Crime in the City.
Oh, you like that?
Yeah, I love that. I'd never heard that one before, and I got that album. It's great. But anyway.
Give me a cheeseburger.
Yeah, and a copy of the Rolling Stone. Right.
Right?
And, I tell you, I was watching Romney today do this baloney speech today about religion, and JFK must have been rolling over in his grave because Romney basically comes out and says, if you don't believe in God, you're not a good American.
Now, I just have to amend your metaphor, okay? If JFK rolled over in his grave, does that mean that Maryland's on top?
Hopefully.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
That's pretty good. But I'm not kidding you. Romney's as dumb as a doorknob. And his speech today was just alienation rather than JFK's, preaching tolerance of, mm-hmm. Separation of church and state.
Yeah.
And it's mind-boggling how these conservatives are, the religious conservatives are just, it's scary that the road that they're trying to take us down, it's mind-boggling to me.
Well, I understand your point. Let me just argue with you mildly about one thing you said. I don't think Mitt Romney is that dumb. I think he is captive to this kind of, Republican evangelical message that he thinks is going to win. I think he's a chameleon who can adopt almost any skin that he thinks is necessary to succeed in a given situation. And I also think that more than most of the Republican candidates, that he actually has captured the kind of happy talk of Ronald Reagan. And I think it sings to certain people. It's off key to me. But I was listening to a spiel that he did. I was listening on satellite radio just last night. And it was interesting because he's pretty good at pandering to people in terms that they understand and relate to. And so don't misunderestimate the guy, because I do think he's going to lose to Huckabee in Iowa, but he should do well in some of the southern states, and it's going to be very interesting to see how much the religion issue dogs him.
It's going to be huge. I mean, he's got the looks, and that in our, I hate to say it, in our country that goes a long ways, but he can't make up his mind, and I think you got to be smart to make up your mind. So we'll disagree on that. But I got to ask you one more thing.
Sure.
Every Sunday we used to see Clinton photo op going to church. Well, we know that the chimp is a born again guy.
Yeah.
Does he actually physically attend a church in Washington?
No, he doesn't have to because he's holier than thou, Ernie.
Everybody needs a straight man, Peter. Thank you.
I've never, you know, since he's been president, I believe he's gone to church maybe three or four times. I mean, Clinton was the acknowledged sinner, and he was there with his Bible every Sunday.
He just is. The way that he goes about ducking the public is just absolutely just, I just think it's way out of hand.
Well,
it's so out of touch with reality. I remember when they asked his dad how much was a loaf of bread and a quart of milk. Remember, he didn't know the scanner at the store existed.
Uh-huh.
Well, I bet you I'd love to see somebody throw a question like that to the guy now.
Well, keep in mind that if Bush went to church every Sunday, it might ruin his record, his perfect record of hypocrisy. Thanks, Ernie. Ron in Sacramento, you're next on the PBC show.
Yeah, that was an interesting call. the one thing I wanted to mention, I read a Bob Herbert column, a joint congressional House Senate subcommittee or something like that, putting out a report that the real cost of the Iraq slush fund and the Afghanistan fiasco, mostly, you know, probably 80 or 90% Iraq, over 10 years will be $3.5 trillion, possibly, with all the interest payments and, all, you know, not even $2 trillion, maybe $3.5 trillion. That should wake up some Republican idiots. But you see, the guy was talking about Bush. Recently, of course, Bush is just having a cow. I thought he was going to start showing his horns and his tail there, standing up there, you know, about that whole the NIE report.
Well, his nose was 4 feet long. Is that good enough for you?
Yeah, and, you know, he wants to start yet another money laundering slush fund by attacking Iran, and I've concluded that regarding Bush's religion, it's some kind of vulture Christianity. You know, Rove has him; he has a copy of these my utmost devotionals and all the rest of it. But I'd like to say to Bush, the Manchurian fruitcake, you know, pull your bloody fangs out of the neck of the Middle Eastern Muslims, you know, just a skosh, pal, you know.
All right. I got to run, Ron, on that note.
Happy trails to
I love doing a radio talk show, and I love great callers.
Until we meet.
You have my gratitude. And I hope you'll tune in again tomorrow, same time, same great radio stations for the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hemp, the superfood for you and your family. Hemp has nutritional values that far exceed any known plant. Hemp, used for food, clothing, and shelter since time began. Hemp, this God-given food source is controlled by your government, making it not legal to grow for American people and farmers, but legal to import. Our founding fathers grew hemp because they knew of the benefits it offered. The protein powder, seeds, and oil are available through hempusa.org. Recommended daily intake of this food source will allow the body to heal itself from many ailments. Loaded with potassium, magnesium, calcium, essential fatty acids, amino acids, and nutrients not available in other plants. Hemp can be stored with a long shelf life as a life-sustaining food source for you and your family. Could this be the government's best-kept secret? Call today at 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Learn. Help. Shop at hempusa.org. We do not charge for shipping. That's 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org today.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
What's your emergency?
An Omaha police dispatcher took the call. No one on the line, but the shots being fired at the Westroads Mall could clearly be heard. It was yesterday afternoon, and 19-year-old Robert Hawkins was on his murderous rampage. Within minutes, eight people were dead, and then, as he intended from the beginning, Hawkins took his own life. CBS News correspondent Dean Reynolds talked to the woman who'd given Hawkins a place to live.
Deborah Maruka Kovac found an emotional suicide letter, expressing love for his parents and friends, but also hinting at a darker side.
He wrote that, I've been a piece of shit all my life, now I'll be famous.
His means to achieve fame involved stealing an assault rifle from his stepfather and possibly sneaking it into the mall under a sweatshirt.
It appeared to be rather
random, certainly very spontaneous.
Police said the shooter entered the mall twice on Wednesday, the first possibly to check it out, but the second clearly to act.
Hawkins had lived in a series of treatment centers, group homes, and foster care since threatening to kill his stepmother in 2002. He was released last year. With Baptist minister Mike Huckabee threatening to lock up the evangelical Christian support in Iowa, Mormon Mitt Romney made a speech today trying to explain where he stands.
If I'm fortunate to become your president, I will serve no one religion, no one group, no one cause, and no one interest.
Romney only used the word Mormon once. President Bush today outlined the plan to offer some relief to subprime mortgage borrowers.
There's no perfect solution, but the homeowners deserve our help.
An interest rate freeze and refinancing options could help as many as 1.2 million homeowners. But as CBS News correspondent Jim Axelrod reports, many more are in trouble.
Bruce Marks, whose group counsels at-risk homeowners, says today's action is important, but not nearly enough.
Well, it's a small step. It's really not going to have a significant impact on the millions of homeowners who are at risk of losing their homes.
There is more help on the way. The Federal Reserve now says it'll have a new set of rules in place by the end of the year to govern subprime loans and try to keep more people